Pittance Podcast is brought to you this week and every week by the Brainstorm Brewery. Hello and welcome to the Pittance Podcast. I am the host of this. My name is Angelo. And this week I'm back with Ryan.
What up, what up? Sex Panther in the motherfucking house. What's going on, people?
Oh, Jesus. Jesus.
That was a cat sound effect.
I know what that was, and all I have to say is that Jesus. No Will tonight. He has a personal issue and had to step away from the cast for tonight. He should return next week, no problem.
He's constipated.
Yeah. I thought it was the other thing. I thought he had, like, heavy flatulence, and we would hear that through the mic all night, and that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, but no poop's coming out, so it's a problem.
This is true. This is true. Heavy flatulence and constipated.
Actually, we're kidding. He was bit by a shark.
Yes. So. Yes. Which caused him to have rabies. It was a rabid shark.
Yes.
That was crossbred with a drop bear.
Well, it had been, the shark itself had been once bitten by a raccoon.
Yes, it had been, actually. And it was weird, too, because, like, it had raccoon eyes, but it swam, and it was a shark.
Very weird.
It was so strange, especially because, like, it was a great white in a river.
Why does this sound like a terrible acid trip? This sounds so bad. Sounds like a worst trip.
I know, we could continue rambling forever, but I'm sure sooner or later. I mean, we could just come up with mystery ailments for Will all night long. That would probably be a pretty amusing cast.
He's actually lost in the woods. He was hiking and hasn't made it back yet, so.
Yeah, see, he sacrificed and had no other creatures to search out, or no other lands in his library, so he just keeps cycling through the deck.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I think that's how Lost in the Woods works.
Is it? I don't even know. I'd have to look that up.
Cause that was the one where you like played nothing but lands in your deck and I want to say Pack Rat. Or no, it wasn't even Pack Rat. It was something else. But, and then you would just like cycle through the whole deck and get that creature out and have all of your lands. It was weird. I don't know.
Sounds like a deck I'd play.
It was from Innistrad. It was not good, but you could, shock people out of the blue with it. They're like, really? You're playing Lost in the Woods? And you're just like, hee
hee. Oh yeah. What's up?
But,
so one of our favorite regions of the world.
Yeah, Sweden.
Yeah.
We play in Stockholm, Sweden, with the pretty women's bee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how about that horrible Americanized fucking Swedish accent? Because over in Stockholm, GP was going on.
Yeah. Interesting metagame from what I can see.
Interesting metagame from what I can see.
I'm kidding.
Damn wizard site froze up on me. I love it. Oh no, it's working again. Yay, I love it.
Yay, top eight.
Top eight, broke down as such. Thiago Rodriguez, 2-0 over Alexander Pascalad. Matej Zatelkai versus Matteo Cervigliano. Matej Zatelkai wins 2-1.
Big Z. That's Big Z.
Big Z. Big Z. Lucas Blahan versus Christian Seibold. Lucas, I guarantee you that's how it's pronounced. Blahan wins 2-1 over Christian Seibold. Einar Baldvinsson over Giovanni Rossi, 2-1. Einar Baldvinsson, 2-1 over Lucas Blahan. And Matej Zatelkai, 2-0 over Thiago Rodriguez. And Matej Zatelkai, 2-0, taking this sombitch down.
Big Z, taking it down over, I mean, it's the only name I recognize outside of Seibold in the
top eight.
I was
going to say, like, you don't know who Christian Seibold is?
Yeah, that's Swedish Kibler.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you should know who that is. Yeah. The rest of them... Let's see, Thiago Rodriguez, Team Brazil, I don't know. Damn, that's a far trip.
Yeah, that's a really far trip. Jesus.
Wow. So they were playing standard. It just is what it is. Thiago was on that. See, I'm seeing black, I'm seeing green, I'm seeing white. Duh, he is playing junk.
Yeah, an interesting note is the one of Whip mainboard. I think he's, oh man, in a world of mirror matches, Abzan mirrors, Whip is very, very good.
Whipping back a Siege Rhino never seems bad to me, and whipping back a Wingmate Rock's really good because if you attack, you do keep the token.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Thought, he can cut down on the Thought Seizes, but pretty standard. I mean, I'm not really seeing anything crazy.
Right, right. So Luckus Blowhard, he was on, green, black. This is graveyard.
Yeah, this is sweet.
Woohoo, Farika in the main board.
This is the green black, devotion where you're trying to get, you know, your Eidolons and your Doom Wakes. Yeah, it's pretty sweet, but he's got, Hornet Queen and a couple of whips and the commune with the gods, you know, so you can throw some stuff in the yard. But I wouldn't really call it this to me looks like, man, doesn't this look to you like a cross between like green black devotion and some sort of
graveyard strategy? Yeah. Well, I think what they're doing is they're using the communion of the gods, right, to get an enchantment, and they have all the use in the world for any enchantment that they don't use because they can use Farika.
Yeah.
To get their critter. So, you know, no, I'll just turn that into a 1-1 with Death Touch because, you know, last time I checked, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of understand it.
Yeah. Sweet. Interesting though.
Very.
It's an interesting take. It's kind of weird. I could see it throwing some people for a loop. They don't know exactly what their opponent's on.
I know what you mean. Matteo Sirigliano, he was on See the Unwritten deck.
Yeah, this is cool too.
Yeah, this is a big time mono green deck with a little bit of black for Doomwake Giant Reaper of the Wilds because Reaper is still a 4/5 and very hard to kill. See the Unwritten is amazing. For those who don't know, that is the mythic for 6. Reveal the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest into your graveyard.
Yeah, seems good. And going off what you just said about Reaper of the Wilds, man, is that good in this meta right now. Say hello, Seadrino. I mean, you just give it Death Touch.
Mm-hmm. It turns on Ferocious for any cards that you might run with Ferocious.
Yep.
Which, like, See the Unwritten is really good at that because then you get to put 2 cards from your battlefield. Or from your, you know what I'm saying, words and stuff.
Yeah.
Words.
Pretty fucking cool, though.
It's definitely different. Sideboard is very streamlined. It's 1 whip, 2 Farika, a Murderer's Cut, 4 Thoughtseize, 3 Unravel, and 4 Nylea's Disciple. Interesting. It seems like green is just like the power color right now.
Yeah.
Hands down. No questions asked. It's just like, oh, you're going to play in standard. You need to play green.
That's pretty much where you want to be.
Right, right. So then we got some Jeskai from Matei Zadokai. Is this a combo? No, it doesn't appear to be.
No, this is,
straight, Jeskai aggro.
Aggro, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seeker, Mantis Rider, Phoenix, Brimoz, Rabblemaster.
Yeah, a couple Sarkins for good measure.
Yeah, for really good measure.
Yeah.
Really good measure.
Yeah, I like the, it's a card, Megan runs 3 of these in her sideboard, the Suspension Fields. Card's really good.
I can see that.
Well, I'm a fan of that card. So the 2 Arc Lightning, I also think, is a sick call in this meta right now, too. Arc Lightning is very, very good against the,
Rabble
Red and Boss Sly deck. Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, just let me kill 3 things. Oh, and by the way, I got a Karanos, too.
Yeah, I mean, this, for the same cost of Drown in Sorrow, you're essentially going to get the same value. And this deck, you know, it doesn't have access to Drown in Sorrow. So Arc Lightning is, I mean, it's a 3-for-1 most cases against those decks. So
right, and against a lot of decks, it might just be a 2-for-1. Hey, that's still good.
Yeah, it's value. It's upside. Yeah.
Or, you know, even if it's a 1-for-1, it's not the worst thing in the world. So, you know, what the hell. And then we had Teemer from Einar Baldvinson.
Yeah.
We haven't seen too much of the Teemer. Although it has been, like, last week we saw it show up a little bit in L.A.,
It's not figured out yet, man. Yeah. I don't know. This is the deck I've been saying. I think people are struggling with, but.
Yeah, I mean, I know how I'd build it, and it would not be the way that everybody else builds it.
What would you do?
See, I would have, I would take advantage of the most powerful Planeswalker in the current format, and I think that's Kiora.
I would say the same thing. If I built this list, they would have, it would have Kiora. It
right.
might have Sarkins, but it would definitely, Kiora is so good against the mid-range decks.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely consider that. It's just, when a world with a bunch of Mantis Riders, Kiora and Xenagos aren't that great, and it kind of depends on.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, sure, Mantis Rider has haste, I get that, but I mean, it's not like you don't have Lightning Strikes available to you.
Yeah. I like Kiora a lot. I would build it the same way, probably. I'm a big fan of that card.
Yeah, I probably would not lean on Polukranos at all, and probably not even Stormbreath Dragon. Like, I might not even use Ashcloud Phoenix all that much, to be real honest. Like, I would probably go far more into a control shell.
With
Savage Knuckleblade being, you know, my main win con, and it'd be mostly Planeswalkers. I mean, you have access to probably the three best Planeswalkers. And I truly believe Kiora is better than people realize. Because, I mean, short of the flyer that has haste, I mean, most things are playing on the ground right now. And you can protect on the ground pretty damn good in the format. So it's like, you know, oh, I have access to Sarkon, I have access to Kiora, and I have access to Elspeth. Like,
well, you don't have Elspeth in this list, there's no white.
But... Oh yeah, no white, you're right. Okay,
so you got Nissa.
I do have Nissa. I don't know if I even want to play Nissa. But nonetheless, I have Sarkon.
You got Xenagos, too.
Yeah, you do have Xenagos, but I'm not going to play a lot of creatures. I would be a lot more like tempo control with this deck. It's the way I would build it. I mean, I don't know that it's right or wrong. I would really have to sit down and...
You can mainboard Stubborn Denial, too, which is... Stubborn Denial is really good right now. So is Disdainful Stroke is, too.
Yep. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would start, you know, with the... my whole starting package would be completely different. Like, my two drop would be Caryatid. My three drop would be, you know, the 2/4... Names are just escaping me tonight. I'm so sorry, people.
Courser.
Yeah, it would be Courser, and I would have like Kiora sitting in there, Sarkon. I mean, hell, I would just run Sarkons. Like, just give me three of them. Give me three Kioras. Let me draw into it. Let me draw into either one of them and, you know, ride them for the win and use bounce spells and burn just to keep my opponent's boards just clear and... Just fucking rock them, because I don't see... you have your Savage Knuckleblade as a win con. I would definitely keep the Heir of the Wilds in there, just because of the Death Touch.
It plays really good defense.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you have a Rhino. Okay, you gained 3 life. I lost 3 life. You will never attack with that. I will never allow you to attack with that, because Heir of the Wilds will always be sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's how I build it. I do like the Crater's Claw as a form finisher as well. Like, I have no problem with that. Definitely Saruk Dragonclaw, which he has in the sideboard, would be in my main board.
That card is nuts, too. I love that fucking card. I think Kibler had, I want to say, 2 or 3 of these in his board. He had more than one, I know that. Card is good.
Yeah, I like that main. It's a 6/6 on 5 with Flash. Like,
well, in your build, it can come out quicker.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, like, with my build, I want to be a little more controlling anyway, and I want to play on the end of your turn a lot. So if for some reason you don't play... Into a counter spell, I just flash out Saruk at the end of your turn.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense to me.
Would you run Dig Through Time?
I don't see why not.
That seems good in the shell you're talking. Seems good to find your win con.
I mean, that or Treasure Cruise, probably Dig Through Time, though it's better in standard than Treasure Cruise is. Because the overall quality of all your cards aren't as good as they are in Eternal formats, you know?
Well, yeah, and you don't need the double island thing for, you know, Eternal formats.
Right. So we had Jeskai from Alexander Pascarad. Or Pascard. See, this is just your aggro as well. He has a Sarkon, 4 Rabble Master, 4 Mantis Rider, Storm Breath, and a whole fucking fuck ton of burn. Oh, and 3 deep time.
Oh, 2 fucking Nullify is sweet.
Yes.
That's really sweet main board. I haven't seen that. That's dope. Huh.
Why is it when I scroll over Nullify, I get Temple of Epiphany? What does Nullify do? I don't remember.
It's, for 2 blue, you counter target creature or aura spell.
Yeah, that's really good right now.
Yeah.
In a world where everyone's running 20 fucking creatures or more, any Abzan deck's running what? Your average is 22?
About, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's over a third of their deck. That justifies you running cards like Nullify.
Very good. I mean, against aggro decks, against mid-range decks, Nullify, sweet. I like that. Good on him. That's some nice tech.
Nice tech. I like seats.
Also, 4 Raise the Alarm is interesting tech also.
It's instant speed creatures. I mean, yeah. Why the hell not? You do have, you know, your Jeskai Charm and stuff in here.
It's a gotcha against the Fire Drinker Satyr decks and stuff too, so.
Sure enough.
Sweet.
Oh my god, it's a DC deck.
Yeah, this is what he ran at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, it is. Dude, Sagu Mauler would be in my build as well. You know, something about Trample, Hexproof, 6/6, seems good.
And I like the Souls too. I know the one of Soul of Innistrad, people aren't... I like the Souls. I've been waiting for Soul of Shandalar to find a home.
Really? That was, yeah.
I like that one. I like Soul of Ravnica. I think in like a Jeskai control or something, the fact that it's a 6/6 flyer and it can draw cards.
Right.
I like that one a lot too.
But maybe I'm biased due to the fact, you know, from drafting as much as I do. But like, I can see like a blue-white heroic deck or a white-red heroic deck, mainly white, using Soul of, Theros as its top end and just crushing face, you know, cause you'll get to that point in the game sometimes where you just don't have enough gas to get through and your creatures just aren't big enough. And then like Soul of Theros comes down. It's just like, I think I have this. I would like to see that run more, although I still believe, Soul of Phyrexia is probably still the best.
Yeah, that's the indestructible one, right?
Is it indestructible or Death Touch?
I think that's the indestructible.
Yeah, it's indestructible. But yeah, that one I still think is the best. Yeah, he didn't change anything from the Pro Tour. So let's move on.
Last one here, we got Giovanni Rossi.
With that mono red flavor.
Yeah. Rabble red. Nothing.
Yeah. You know what? We should start calling this Cherokee red, cause that's some banging ass pop.
I love the fucking, dude, more and more every week it seems people are more and more on Harnessed by Force. I fucking love that card and I like seeing three in the board. Sick, man. This deck is nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's I really so wish bad, I wanted the Great Revel would quit seeing play.
Yeah, it's really.
It's for selfish reasons. Don't get me wrong. Like I want to pick them up cheap before they rotate out. Because I do want them for Legacy Burn.
Okay.
But.
You don't have a playset already?
No, I do not. Dude, I don't play paper very often. And now that I'm getting myself back into it, I gotta pick up cards here and there cheap. Like, I still have a bunch of older cards.
I think I got extras of those.
Sweet. That sounds great. Yeah. Well, that's what we're gonna do there. I have a bunch of cards that I need. It's kind of funny. I don't know. Christmas is coming, so.
Yeah, you know. That's true. That is true. You hear that, imps out there? Christmas is coming. We like magic.
Damn, just throw it out there, man.
I'm just saying. I'm just letting the imps know we love magic. I mean, it's cool to get cards for Christmas.
Yeah. So, did you watch any of this? I mean, I was busy all weekend, so I didn't get to watch
it. No, this was like, I got the email at like 2 a.m, like GP Stockholm is starting or something.
Yeah, you know what? I actually did catch a little bit of it in the hall waiting for, my event to start.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't watch a bunch of this, like, so it's kind of weird. Frank Carstens did give us a top 5 cards though. And because it's Frank Carstens, I can trust that these are actually 5 good cards, I'd hope.
Okay, what do we got?
Well, it starts with Riddle of Lightning.
What?
Yeah, this was a card I barely ever even drafted. It's choose target creature, player scry 3. Reveal the top card of your library. Riddle of Lightning deals damage equal to that card's converted mana cost to that creature or player. So I'm guessing you play some big stuff. Oh, yeah, there's Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time in the format. That's a lot of damage to a player.
Yeah, that's weird. It says someone was running a blue-red counter burn deck. Huh.
Yeah, Mikael Magnusson. Yeah, and he combined Dig Through Time, Treasure Cruise with Riddle of Lightning. Now, that's pretty sweet.
Said it in one turn, he took his opponent, in two turns, he took his opponent from 22 to 0 with double
Riddle.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Treasure Cruise is 8, Dig Through Time is 8. That's straight to the face. That's pretty nasty. Doomwake Giant comes in because people are playing little things, and that makes Doomwake Giant good. God's Willing, because, you know, hey, it's still good. It is still good, folks. Whip of Erebos and Ashcloud Phoenix. Ashcloud Phoenix is really a lot better. Like, I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was okay. It's a lot better than I thought originally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not huge on it, but it's a good card.
I don't know, the more I look at it, the more I'm just like, this is actually pretty damn good. Like, it fits what you want it to do. I mean, it's faced, you play it on 4, you attack, 5. This thing should have haste, though, that's my only issue with it.
It would need to cost more.
It flips itself over, then you unmorph it, deal 2 to the face, and then swing for 4. It's kind of sick.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the card. I mean, I think it's a 2 of in the teamer deck. I'm not all about running the 4 of we've been seeing and stuff, but I think it's got its place. I even like a couple in somewhere in the 75 of a Jeskai deck.
Right. Yeah, absolutely there. Anyway, let's move on. We have Minneapolis.
Yeah, and there's something really cool that happened at this event, which we'll get to in a minute.
Good.
We go over the legacy portion.
Ooh, legacy. We'll start in standard this week.
Okay.
No curveball like last week. Andrew Johnson, Mike Rico. Andrew Johnson wins 2-1. Nick Paulson versus Aaron Glick. Paulson wins 2-0. Derek Thill versus Donovan Schultz. Derek Thill wins 2-1. Robert Caldarell. Yeah. Versus Jeremy Bylander. Bylander wins 2-1. Jeremy Bylander 2-0 over Thill. Andrew Johnson 2-0 over Nick Paulson. And Andrew Johnson wins this thing 2-1. Ryan, what the hell were they playing? Please fill me in.
Johnson took it down with good old Jess Guy wins. Old Jess Guy aggro. Justin, he's running 2 Storm Breath, which I really like, 4 Rabble Master, 4 Mana Strider, and thank God, because I fucking hate the card. I'm glad to see some people cutting back on numbers of it. I don't think it's all that. Like, people really suck the card's dick. Is Seeker of the way?
Seeker's good.
He's not that good, though. Like, people are like, oh my god, this card, you need... No, I'm glad to see people slowly moving back on that card. We've seen it, like, being cut down to, like, 2 copies. I think that's about good, but the 4-4 of, I've never agreed with.
Here's the funny thing. Against this deck, you definitely want 4 of them. The lifelink's that huge. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if you expect a lot of early burn... And, you know, you expect a lot of things going at your face. You need a lot of, you know, lifelink will actually help you.
Sure.
Fit. So yeah. It's kind of one of those.
You have to play anger. You can choose to play anger too if that's a matchup or something you're worried about.
Right. But I mean, you can hedge your bets and play both.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, this top 8 wasn't all that. The most exciting deck to come out of this top 8, honestly, was second place Jeremy Bylander's blue-white control list.
Oh, yes. And I want to look at this and go over this. Yeah. The only thing I don't like about this is his win con.
The Prog Sphinx?
I'm not a fan of Prog Sphinx, dude.
When you play the card, it feels great, dude. When once you start, the second you scry with it, you've locked the game up. You know it, your opponent knows it, it's so good.
Look, I've played with Prognoxus Sphinx, and I'm not a fan of the card. It's just not, I mean, if this is what blue has as its win con, like, it's, to me, it's kind of soft.
Blocks Storm Breath, blocks Sarkhan.
It does.
8 Rock. I mean, it blocks Ashcloud Phoenix, blocks them all. It blocks all the flyers that are seeing play right now, outside of maybe the Resolute Archangel that's being whipped into play, and I don't even think that takes this down.
It does. Look, I'm not going to argue with you. It's just something about it. It's one of those cards that's built in a way that... I don't know if it's flavor. I don't know what it is. I just don't care for it.
Yeah, I hate the discard part about the Hexproof, but actually, it's not even so much that as having to tap it. There is times where your opponent will just force you to tap it down. And
then they swing through you and you lose.
Yeah, I mean, that does happen, but...
Right, that does happen. That's my issue with it.
I think the benefits of this card and how quickly it closes out and ends the game, just the scry ability. I don't know. I think the benefits, the downside, it's like Master of Ease. This is, I mean, it has some downside, but I think its upside is makes it way worth it.
I can see, and this will probably sound weird, I would immediately switch the 2 Wingmate Rocks with the Prognostic Space for the sideboard of the main.
But you're never attacking, you're never-
I don't care. That 3-4 is fine, and if I get an Elspeth to trigger raid, that's great, but I just, you know,
Wingmate Rock dies to, not only does it die to all the, like, black removal stuff, but it dies to Stoke the Flames, it dies to all the 4 damage spells.
I know, it dies to a lot of things, it's just, I like that card better.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of Sphinx, I can't explain it, I mean, it's just,
Sphinx molested you when you were little.
No, and the bad thing is, like, historically, I like Sphinxes. You know, no Sphinx molested me.
I know.
Yeah, he walked into my room and he was like, Wilford Brimley, I got diabetes. I was like, what the hell?
Diabetes Sphinx, yes. that is true. So yeah, interesting list though. I mean, yeah, I figured you'd be all over this one.
Oh yeah, no, it's cool to see a control deck.
So what's it got here? Aside from the Sphinx we talked about.
Well, it definitely has some Elspeth, because, you know, control, remember? Elspeth. Remember how good she was? She's still good.
It's 3, but not 4.
3, but not 4. Exactly. We have 4 Banishing Light. Those are taking place of your 4 crystal balls that got rid of everything. I'm bad with names tonight. Fuck.
Oblivion Ring.
No, the Ravnica card. Blue, white, one.
Oh, Detention Sphere.
Detention Sphere, yeah. Those replaces your Detention Sphere. Devouring Light because,
it's good.
It's still good.
Yeah, it's White's Hero's Downfall, like, so it doesn't end a Planeswalker, but being able to exile some stuff is really sweet. It's a great way to deal with Sarkhan.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Three dig through time, because when you're playing a deck that is control, but not old school control, and it's more I need a certain answer control. Dig through time's really good. Two Disdainful Stroke, four Dissolve, three Jace's Ingenuity because it says draw three cards for five at instant speed. Three Last Breath, still good turns out.
Yeah, I've been on that card as nuts. I like it.
Two Nullify, two Divination, and four End Hostilities because we destroy everything.
Yep. And Nullify showing up in the list again is, I like that card.
Yeah, I think it's good right now.
Yep.
I really do think it's good.
And there's the Resolute Archangel we were just talking about, one off in the board that does not kill Prognostic Sphinx, unfortunately. But sweet card nonetheless. It's really good here.
Yeah, it's really good. I go End Hostilities next turn, Resolute Archangel. I think I have you.
Yep.
I think. I could be wrong, but usually if you clear the board and then play Resolute Archangel, they're out of gas.
Yeah. Four Nyx Fleece Ram in the board, that's funny.
You gotta do something.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, like, you really don't have a choice. You gotta do something.
Yeah, fair.
So, we'll move to Legacy, because like Ryan said, there was nothing really great.
No, this top eight was kind of boring. I mean, just...
So, well...
Artemer and Abzan in green-red.
We had a Legacy tournament sitting up in, I'd love to see the numbers on this tournament, because all the best players who played Eternal Formats was sitting in Philadelphia, you know, so I'd be really interesting to see what their numbers are, but their Legacy event, it was Jesse Olsen versus Blake Patrar. Patrar wins 2-1. Andrew Lean, 2-0 over Michael Horn. Daryl Feltner, 2-1 over Jake Yu. Nick Leaf, 2-0 over Craig Spitzer. Daryl Feltner over Nick Leaf. Anthony Lean over Blake Patra. And Anthony Lean wins this thing. So what was so cool about this tournament?
And maybe it explains what you were, you know, this might explain why this deck is in fourth place. It's because all the good players were where you were at. We have Slivers.
Yes, Slivers.
The first time that we have talked about Slivers in a top eight since I've been doing the show with you.
Yeah, this is the first time I've talked about Slivers in a top eight. Slivers is a deck. It's typically a control deck, which is exactly what this shell looks like.
This was sweet. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was crazy.
I mean, I haven't seen it good in a long, 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 long time, but sure.
Yeah, well, the Efficient Gale Rider seemed pretty nice. I think he lost to a lands deck, the same guy that it came in third running lands.
Okay.
I think he played in the Swiss and lost. He got the lockout, basically.
Yeah, lands can shut a game down.
Yeah, what's the Wasteland, Life from the Loam Lock, is that what it is?
Yeah, Loam Lock. Okay, so, alright, here's what this is. Crystalline Sliver, it's a white and a blue, and creatures Slivers you control have Shroud. It should just say creatures you control.
What is Shroud?
Shroud is, it's like Hexproof, but not Hexproof, because you cannot attach anything to it as well. They cannot be attached to it all.
That's definitely not as good as Hexproof.
But... It's not. The funny thing is, like, Hexproof, everyone used to call it Troll Shroud, because Troll Ascetic was the one that originally had that ability, and so it just became Troll Shroud. It was like, you know, everything else has Shroud, and then there's Troll Shroud. It's better than Shroud. And then Hexproof became, like, this thing that they gotta put one in every fucking set. It should be, like, very, very, very rare.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Hexproof.
Yeah, Gale Rider Sliver, one blue. Slivers you control have flying. Hibernation Slivers, because when you pay two life, you can return this permanent to its owner's hand. It protects all of your important slivers. You have a Muscle Sliver. It's a green and one. Slivers you control get +1/+1. Predatory Sliver, same deal, +1/+1 to slivers. And, I mean, that gives him 7 pump effects right there.
Jesus.
Then he has 4 of the Sinew Slivers, so that makes it, which is the white version from Time Shifted. So he has 11 forms of +1/+1, and then he has the Wing Sliver as well, so that's more flying. So 5 flyers, 11 pumps, protection, and then Shroud. And then you back all this up with your daisies, your force of wills, your brainstorms, your aether vow, your relic of progenitus. Seems decent.
Four cavern of souls.
Well, yeah, you definitely run cavern. I mean, why the hell not? Three sliver hive.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's a nice addition to the deck.
You should have seen his opponent. There was a match on camera where he played the sliver hive and his opponent picked it up and just shook his head, like, cause he had no idea what he was on until that point.
Yeah.
They were like 3-1-1 or something. So they were in the feature match area. So the opponent had to know that. I don't know, it was weird.
Something's wonky going on.
Yeah, there was also a crazy soldiers deck that they showed on camera too. This was a weird Legacy weekend.
Yeah, I'm looking at the sideboard. He has two more relics, three Darkheart slivers, which is basically sacrifice a sliver, gain three life.
That's nice.
Three harmonic slivers. I do like harmonic sliver. It's green, white, one. When a creature comes into play, destroy target artifact or enchantment. This has seen play in just Maverick decks.
Yeah, and Birthing Pod.
Yeah, and Pod, yeah. Sower of Temptation, two Fluster Storms, and three Thalias.
What is this Sower of Temptation? That art is sick. What does this do?
It basically says, give me that. It comes into play, it steals something, and as long as
it's play, you can't. That is sweet.
Yeah, it was weird because, like, fairies barely ran it, and it's a fairy.
That's really good, though. That's a good card.
Yeah, but that two butt, it really is.
Yeah, in a world of lightning bolts, I suppose.
Yeah, it even in a world of shocks, it ends up getting smacked more often than you would like. On the surface, it seems just so excellent, but it does end up dying a lot more than what your average player would like, which is a shame. But let's see, we had Jeskai Delver.
Wait, can I ask you why he's running two Flusterstorm over, like, any number of counter spells?
I don't want to auto lose against Storm. Is that a good reason?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's why.
That's fair.
Hey, speaking of Storm in 6, we had Painter in 5th, Reanimator in 7th, Blue-Red Delver in 8th, Dredge, Omnitel.
Keep going down.
Counterbalance. Counterbalance. Whoa, they actually called it Counterbalance. There's no miracles in that.
No, keep going. Keep
Mog
going.
Catcher.
Yeah, Mono-Red Mog Catcher.
That's
funny.
Yeah, Rock-A-Mar, Kiki-Jiki, Tut-Tut, oh my god, Tut-Tut Scrapper.
That's Tut-Tut Scrapper. Why do so many of these cards seem way too expensive for Legacy?
Mana-wise? It's from Zendikar because they are. sorry, they are.
Four mana, fucking Kiki-Jiki and Legacy?
Yeah. Tut-Tut Scrapper destroys artifacts when it comes into play, so, you know, it's good in its own way. Simeon Spirit Guide, that helps with the mana. Siege Gang Commander. There's a Siege Gang Commander in the top 16. Come on, people.
Three of them. Is there a way to go infinite or something with the Kiki-Jiki? Am I missing? There's gotta be something here that Kiki-Jiki goes off.
Let's see, Mog Catcher 4, Kiki-Jiki. I'm looking. I mean, Rabble Master?
That doesn't have
that gets anything. You extra things, I guess. Gets you extra goblins. You'd never need to copy a Magus of the Moon.
I don't get it. I don't get the Kiki-Jiki, but whatever. Someone explain it to me. I don't know. But
I
yeah.
Don't get this deck at all, to be real honest with you. Like,
yeah, this deck kind of looks, I have no idea how this got 13th place. Like, what is this spell package here? This is weird.
The spells make sense. Chalice of the Void's good.
Yeah.
I mean, just run those. Four Chrome Mocks. Okay. Sword of Fire and Ice. Fine. Trinisphere, because, you know, it makes things cost mana that usually is free. Four Blood Moon. Okay. Eight. He probably won off of the 8 moon effects. Realistically, like, that's probably how he got there, off the 8 moon effects alone. Between the four maxes and the four blood moons, that's probably how he did it. And then he put a Jitte on something or a Sword of Fire and Ice on something. This probably ends up playing a lot like Death and Taxes, to where it's just like, okay, this is what I need.
Yeah, there's so many things in this deck like I've never ever even seen in Legacy before, but some sweet shit. Three Anarchy in the board? What a nut card. Why don't they print stuff like this anymore? Anarchy is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but Anarchy is like, they don't do color hosers like that anymore.
Oh, why not, man?
Because people got butthurt over them.
Well, that's, fuck, man, it's a game.
Yeah, but when people get butthurt over cards, they quit printing those cards.
The Anarchy is a sweet card. That's a sweet design. Yeah.
4 mana, destroy all white permanents. Yeah, it seems a bit strong.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's strong. That's fucking how these spells should be.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, like, you know, I'm somebody who played Boil, so I'm the wrong person to talk
about. Yeah, I was going to say, you're the biggest griefer I know.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, people get butthurt over things.
Like, you didn't play the shit out of Anarchy back in the day. You probably went Stone Rain into Anarchy.
Actually, I was not the biggest fan of Anarchy back in the day. Like,
really?
No, because back when Anarchy was around, I was kind of like on the Stasis Lock deck or the Necro deck the whole time. So okay. I didn't play a lot of Anarchy because...
Well, that's griefy, though. You were still on a fucking griefy deck.
Oh, dude, Stasis Lock's just ignorant. But,
yeah, you're still making people feel bad.
I'm like, Winter Orb, Stasis, I think I win?
Yeah, that's pretty mean.
But I'll play a creature in 15 turns just to finish this game.
Ooh, Winter Orb, now that's a cool card. That's the with the polar bear art, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, Emrakul, that's in the sideboard for the show and tell. Yep. Pyrokinesis... Because Pyrokinesis, you just remove a red card from your hand, from the game, instead of paying Pyrokinesis cost, and it does 4 damage any way you choose among creatures. Why would you run that one? Seriously.
Yeah, I don't know.
Fire Blast is out there, people.
I don't get the fucking Sting Scourger either. Why would you play a creature with Echo? I mean, it bounces something. It's like a Vapor Snag, I guess.
Eh, it's a Vapor Snag, and... If they, like, show and tell out a Gristlebrand, you follow that next turn by playing this, and then they have to have another show and tell.
Got it. Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like, put that back in your hand. You'll never hard cast it.
Yeah, and then the Sting Scourger dies. It's cool.
Yeah, you're usually pretty happy with put that back in your hand.
Got it.
3 Ensnaring Bridge because, you know, you shouldn't have cards in your hand. Yeah. So, there's that. Anything else that I want to
keep going down.
I'm looking. Let's see. Painter.
Well, all the way at the bottom.
Number 16.
No. Soldiers, the very bottom.
Dude, I'm looking at the very bottom. It says Shardless Sultai.
Really? Are you not? That's not showing up for you?
No. Nope.
Oh, the list you're looking at ends at 16th. Well, in 115th place.
Why the fuck would I want to look at 115th place? How many people were even in this?
Look how bad this deck is.
Where is that page? I ain't even gonna look it up, dude. I
click on decks, and then on the Legacy side, Minneapolis, and then down at the bottom. But this deck runs, if you may remember, the M13 All-Star for 6 mana, Captain of the Watch. It is, he's running 4 Captain of the Watch, gives other soldiers vigilance and +1/+1, and when he enters the battlefield, you put 3/1 white soldiers onto the battlefield. This deck was so funny. He's running 4 Suppression Field, so like people might think it's like a prison deck or something, but it's not. 4 Chromox, 4 Chalice of the Void, but just some of these cards, like Preeminent Captain, like what is this? Is this Legacy? What the fuck? It's a 3-mana 2/2 with first strike that when it attacks, put a soldier creature from your hand on.
I know what it does. I'm just sitting over here shaking my head going, I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Yeah, this is a Legacy list, apparently. I guess if you go Preeminent Captain into Captain of the Watch, that's pretty sweet, I guess. I don't know.
No, that is, but it's not Legacy sweet.
No, 4 Ballyrush Bannerets. Kipkin spell and soldier spells. Oh man, I gotta stop talking about this list. That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it was 115 in a water downfield.
Yeah, that's fucking funny.
I mean, like, this is I should have drove there and spiked that tournament. Instead, I went where the good players were.
They put that guy on camera. He started the day like 3-0 or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so that was Legacy Minneapolis.
Yes, now we're going to talk about some real Legacy.
Yeah, here we go, baby.
Philadelphia happened Eternal Weekend.
And someone was there, right?
I was there. I'll get into that in a minute. We'll go over what actually happened here, and then I will get up on my what words do I want to use? I will get up on my soapbox.
I don't know, but I'm looking at the coverage page for this, and the guy holding the giant box pearl, how much is that worth?
I don't know. See, the funny thing was, like, that was the prize, but second place got $1,800.
So I'd rather have the cash, man.
Dude, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, can you just immediately turn that thing around and sell it for $2,000? Because if not, if I'd have got into the finals, I'd have just scooped my opponent. I'd be like, nah, dude, it's yours. I want the money. I mean, it's a cool-ass piece of art.
Maybe not even a card. It looks like it may even just be like...
It's a painting of a card.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really cool-looking, but... I mean, they were kind of weird. Yeah, weird. That's the word I'm going to use.
Yeah. K-Fed doesn't look all that thrilled holding his giant thing. So.
K-Fed?
Yeah. I can't spoil it, so I'm using the nickname.
Oh my God. One. It's not, okay, finally it switched for me. Thank you.
There we go. And we got another, you know, good one here in the top eight. Can't wait to talk about. So.
Yes. So, top eight of the legacy was Kevin Jones.
Wait.
Zero, what?
Where are you seeing? Oh, okay. You
got going down.
Legacy coverage. All right.
Yeah. Tony Charlanza. Kevin Jones wins 2-0. Ralph Bettish. Nate Strum. Nate Strum wins 2-1. John Grudzina, 2-0 over Eric DeLuca. Zach Dobbin over Eric Markowitz, 2-0. Or 2-0 Eric Markowitz, I'm sorry. John Grudzina, 2-1 over Eric Markowitz. That time I got it right. Kevin Jones, 2-1 over Nate Strum. And Kevin Jones wins this some bitch, 2-0. Now, there was a lot of decks in the room. God damn it, I cannot find the decks for this fucking coverage. I hate that. Wizards page is bad.
It really is, dude. With the new, they just need to get rid of this. They just need to go back to whatever it was before, even.
Yeah, it's just, you know what, I think
it's better
the more
than
I use it, honestly, the more I use it, the easier it does get, but, ugh. So,
Zach. I see vintage top 8 deck list.
Although it doesn't, I guess that is a legacy deck. Okay.
Okay, yeah, legacy championship.
Yeah.
Deck. Okay,
so right. Zach Dobbin, he was playing Helmer Raider. It's Tezzeret. I mean, I don't know why they called it Helmer Raider, but it's what we've known forever as the Tezzeret with the Helm of Obedience combo in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. You can win the Tezzeret or you can win with Helmet.
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin Jones, he was on Blue Red Delver. There was a lot of Delver.
Yeah, I can imagine. This is the Pyro version, Pyromancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Oh, a four monastery Swiss spear.
Swiss spear. It's like, young Pyro, four Swiss spear, four Delvers, and then just all the good spells that Legacy affords you.
It's four Treasure Cruise. Is Treasure Cruise really that good?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, it's, so unreal in Legacy. Like, I mean, I know people are already talking about, like, if they don't insta-ban this, I'm done playing Legacy for a while. Which makes no sense to me because, like, you can play around. You can make...
There's already recall format, so...
Yeah. Punishing Maverick. This is Domri Rod in a Maverick deck with a Punishing Fire combo.
Huh. I like it. I like, you know, it's got some creatures. I like the one of Voice of Resurgence is interesting. Some stuff I've never heard of. Scrib Ranger. The fuck is that thing?
Oh, you don't know what Scrib Ranger is? Ooh. It's a 1/1 flash Prot Blue.
Seems good.
Yep. You can return forest to untap creatures.
Okay. Yeah, that's decent for sure. Untap, Mother... a giant knight.
No. You untap Mother of Runes and then you protect your stuff.
Ah. Yes. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. This is pretty sweet looking.
Yeah. You can untap the knight, but most of the time you want to untap the Mother of Runes to protect a second target, you know?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Cool.
Yeah.
Aside from that, it's a Maverick. Teamer Delver. It's just Delver, Pyromancer, Tarmogoyf, and then all the same spells.
Just got it's Delver. Not Teamer. Let's not.
No.
It's Rug.
It is. It is what it is. Then we have, Jeskai Delver, and this is, Delver, Stoneforge, true name, and all the spells. It's just, I love these horrible names they're using. Jeskai Delver.
Only two treasure crews here,
only
though.
Only two, yeah.
Delver.
I don't think you need more than two or three of these.
He's not on the party boat plan, I guess.
Yeah, then we have another Jeskai Delver, then a Sultai Delver. So what's so different about a Sultai Delver, you ask? Well, I'm so glad you asked, because this one
Rhinos. Bug Delver, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see. Blue Bat. Yeah, it's Bug Delver. Yeah. What's so different about it? They can run Abrupt Decay. Yeah. And they have Death Knight Shamans.
And one Treasure Cruise.
Yes. And then another Delver list with Blue Red Delver to round out our top eight. So let's see.
I love that one of Chain Lightning. Is that common? Was Jones running a Chain Lightning? Is a one of Chain Lightning normal for this list? That's new to me.
Which list? I'm sorry, I'm counting.
One, the last one that you just mentioned, Tony, at the end there. Tony Chirlanza's Blue Red Delver.
Not much
lightning is weird.
See, it's, nope, that's normal.
Huh, yeah. Maybe I'm not familiar with it.
Two forks in a chain, yeah.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Six Delvers, all right.
Come on, people. Legacy is supposed to be more fun than this.
Because that's a bump for
Eternal Weekend.
Delver's good still.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever was wondering about that.
See, here's the thing. If you own four Delvers, from now until the end of time, you keep your four Delvers. Because they're good in every format they're legal in.
Yeah.
Just keep them. You may never use them. Just keep them. They're never going to get reprinted, and they'll never go down in value.
Could be a $2 common someday.
They could be more than that, because they will never be reprinted, because they're a flip card.
Yeah, but Amaro's already said they're going to do flip cards again at some point.
Okay. They won't be printed in the near future anytime soon.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm really excited about the fucking first vintage list on here. Oh, nuts, man.
Dude, okay, the vintage was fun. Vintage, we had Mark Toko versus, Dario Marino, or wait, no, I'm sorry, Roland Chang versus Dario Marino. Marino wins 2-1. Harry Corvese 2-1 over Ryan Glacken, and I was talking to Harry Saturday about what he was going to be running for vintage, and I'm glad he went with what he went with. Christian Griffin loses to Ryan Ebert 2-0. Mark Toko beats down Nam Tran 2-0. Mark Toko 2-1 over Ryan Ebert. Harry Corvese loses in the semis to Dario Marino. Damn it, Harry. When is Harry going to get his big win? Like, this is driving him nuts.
Yeah, he just...
I mean, you take the money and you're happy with it.
It's like Peyton Manning, man. He's good in the regular season and gets the playoffs.
That's fine, as long as he gets one. I mean, Peyton got one.
Yeah, that's true, man. Harry, he'll have his breakout. This sweet deck.
Yeah, Mark Toko wins it over Dario Marino. Okay, so now I have to pull up vintage decks because I need to explain these.
Yeah, the first one here is fucking really nice.
Vintage top eight deck list. Dun, dun, dun. So, this is... Gee, can I see deck list? Thank you. Blue Red Delver.
Yep.
Here's the funny thing. Blue Red Delver in Vintage works very similar to the way it works in Legacy, except for it has power and Dak Faden.
Yep.
That's important.
Dak Faden is the nuts.
Yeah, he can draw two cards and make you discard two cards. That turns out to be really, really good.
Wonder what he sells for. I'd be interested to know.
Not very much. Vintage is such a low play, format. Like, I mean, he's been selling, I want to say, right around 20 for the longest time. Okay. But you use, you know, Snapcaster, Young Peasy, and Delver of Secrets. This is a deck that I think won last year, except it didn't have Dak. You got four Force, four Lightning Bolt, four Mental Misstep. Yes, that's legal in this format, people. Two Gush.
That card.
Because Gush is amazing.
Yeah, Steve Belladin, I think his name is. He's like a vintage master. He's the guy that his whole deck is, if the card was printed in Alpha, he's got it.
And right.
He's got like the Alpha Lotus and shit in his deck. Dude's nuts. He actually wrote an entire book on Gush. Just the card.
Dude, the card's just so good. It's like, I'm going to return two islands. And I'm just going to draw two cards. Or two lands, even. I don't even think it has to be islands, does it?
No, it's two islands. Return two islands.
Okay, yeah. And you draw two cards instead of paying five. Yeah. That's not a drawback. Pyroblast, two of. A single Ancestral Recall. a single Brainstorm, a single Fire and Ice. So earlier I said Dak Faden's important. The drawing cards is really important, but you gotta remember he gains control of artifacts. And this is a format where the artifacts that are being run are Moxes and Lotai. So we had three artifacts in his deck, Mox Sapphire, Mox Ruby, and Black Lotus.
Yep.
Black Lotus. And yeah, they were, you could just.
And you're only allowed one of each of those?
They're restricted, yeah.
See, I would, no, that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be.
No. It absolutely should be.
Is there a format where nothing's restricted? Because that to me would be true vintage.
No. The problem with that is if nothing's restricted.
It'd just be four ofs of the power.
The games turn out to be so insanely broken. Like, it's like turn one, whoever goes first wins. Like, that's just how it'll play out every time if you don't restrict, you know, especially like the power.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
You know, I play Lotus and three recalls. Dude, how are you going to beat me?
Yeah, this is pretty sweet, though. I like this a lot.
I mean, it uses Preordained, Treasure Cruise, Gitaxian Probe, Ponder, Time Walk, because, you know, why not have more power? Because five of them is plenty.
Ogman Treasure Party Boat is cruising its way, cruising USA, just cruising in the fucking... in the vintage format.
Mm-hmm. And another restricted card, he has a one of Strip Mine.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just nuts. And then the sideboard is Ravenous Trap, Ancient Grudge. Yeah, I said Ravenous Trap. What?
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, it is. It shuts down a lot of the graveyard strats. Four Ingot Chewers, and is it Staticaster? Got three Draft Digger's Cage and a Mountain.
Hmm.
Christian Griffin.
This is interesting.
Yeah, it is. So we have blue, green, red. So we have Rugged Delver here, but this is, you know, he has Tigron Predators. When it deals combat damage to a player, you destroy target artifact or enchantment. Again, the artifacts in this format are ridiculously powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, so destroying artifacts is important. Four Force, two Misdirection. You may exile blue card from your hand rather than pay its mana cost, and it's changed the target of a spell to another spell or to another target. Three Mental Misstep. If you're playing in this format, even if it's not in color, typically you are running three, four Mental Missteps in almost every deck just because it's that powerful.
I mean, you get to counter some insane spells.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even, Ponder and Preordain, sure, but that's just not even the half of it. I mean, you get some sweet shit in this form.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm gonna, you know, counter your recall.
Yeah.
Darn, you know, two Fluster Storm, two Spell Pierce, because, you know, there's nothing better than, stopping a turn one Mox. Mm-hmm. Trust me, there's nothing better than stopping a turn one Mox. Three Lightning Bolt. Fire and Ice, this is an important card. It's an early split card, and for the blue side, it's a blue and one. You can tap target permanent and draw a card. And the fire side lets you deal two damage divided as you choose amongst creatures or players. Ancient Grudge, a one of. Recall, a one of. God darn it. I lost the page. What the hell?
Oh, no. He's got the one of Recall.
Okay.
One Mystical Tutor, one Brainstorm, three Gush. Why one Mystical Tutor? That card seems insane. Is that another one that's restricted?
I believe so, yes.
It's the one mana instant. Yes, search your library for instant sorcery card. That's really good. Three Gush, sorceries, one Time Walk. I love the art on that. The original art. That is so awesome.
Yeah, with the little skeletons.
Yeah, and Stonehenge and shit. One Ponder. Again, is Ponder a card that's restricted in this format?
No.
Just one is all you want?
Yeah, you just want one. There's just more powerful things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm just used to Legacy.
Dude, he's running one Brainstorm, you know? Like, run Gush.
Yeah. Two Preordains and three Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Artifacts, one Lotus, one Mox Emerald, one Emerald, one Ruby, one Sapphire.
I mean, one of the big differences between, Vintage and Legacy is the fact that Gush is legal. You know, like, it really cuts down your numbers on a lot of the other cards.
Okay. Why don't all these decks run all the Moxes?
Because you don't always need all the Moxes. But since you ask, Shops got played.
And this one does, yeah.
You ask, so shall you receive. What is Shops, you ask? Well, alright. Shops is a duplicate deck. It works really hard off of your, it's an artifact deck. Like, I mean, there is colors in it, but they're weird colors, like, you know, Phyrexian Metamorph, you know, it's blue, but it's not. But aside from that, what it is it's like you have 24 artifacts, which is one Lotus, one Mana Crypt. God damn it, I love the Mana Crypt. One Mox Emerald, Jet, Pearl, Ruby, Sapphire. Yeah, that was all of them. Four Chalice of the Voids. You set those at differing costs, usually 1 through 4. A Soul Ring, that's also restricted, just in case you was asking. Three Sphere of Resistance. Okay, and what that does is that makes all spells cost an additional one. Four Thorn of Amethyst, because, you know, let's make all non-creature spells cost more than one, because most of what you're playing is non-creature spells. A Trinisphere, and four Tanglewire.
Oh, I love Tanglewire. What a sick card. Look at the art on that, too.
Yeah, that's the remake fucking art from the 20th. Fading Four, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player taps an untapped artifact, creature, or land he or she controls for each fade counter on Tanglewire. Fade counter comes off of the Fading Four. When it comes into play, you put four counters on it. I know a lot of newer players have never played with Fading. So what we have in the creatures is four Phyrexian Revokers. That is just generally a hosier card. Four Phyrexian Metamorph, there are billions of things to copy. Four Lodestone Golems, because we're just going to make everything cost everything. Four Kadafa Forge Master. This is going to search for something. This is not your win con. Duplicate, because it just acts as another whatever. That's a 2/4. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So your win cons are Steel Hellkite and Sundering Titan.
Seems sweet.
Yes. When he enters the battlefield or leaves the battlefield, you choose a land of each basic land type and then destroy those lands. You typically are going to use your Phyrexian Metamorph with your Sundering Titan to destroy everything. You're just going to completely knock out all of your opponent's lands. The only thing he's going to have is his Moxes. Oh. Okay? And then you can, you know, win with your 7/10 or your Steel Hellkite. Lands, he's got a strip mine in there. It works a lot of ways as a mana hoser with land destruction. You follow me?
Uh-huh.
It's like, one, I'm going to make everything cost a bazillion more for you, and two, I'm just going
to
go ahead and destroy every land you have, so you're never actually going to be able to play anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mean deck. It really is.
But this can't win on turn one.
No. Well, yeah, it can. But it wins on turn one, but the game's not over yet. Like, they literally can go, like, land/mox into Soul Ring, use the Soul Ring to play a Sphere. Then you still have a land or a Mox, and you just put it out of reach for the other player to even be able to play his first Mox.
To start casting spells, yeah.
And at that point, as long as your draws are decent, you've won the game.
Yeah.
Because they never can catch up.
Now, I can see Tanglewire, like, coming in and, like, maybe for some control decks. Well, that just seems like that would screw you, too. Why would you want four of those in here? Or why would you want that card if it makes you tap stuff down too?
Okay, it makes you tap things? Yes. But the thing is, like, you can tap your Thorn of Amethyst, your Sphere of Resistance. The artifacts you tap don't do anything. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, and you don't have to, as long as you tap like four things, you don't have to tap a creature. You could tap four of these just artifacts.
You're beginning to get what I'm saying, because, you know, you tap an untapped artifact, a creature, if you have a creature, of course. Or no, untapped artifact, creature, or land, okay, for each. So the first time, yeah, you might have to tap one land, or, you know, you'll have to tap a land that probably matters. But typically, you're going to tap these artifacts that just mean nothing. And you're just going to be like, all right, I don't care, I tapped a Sphere of Resistance. And they're going to look and go, ah, darn. And, you know, in the sideboard, he has Worm Coil Engine. That's another possible win card. 4 Tormod Crypt, 3 Crucible of Worlds. I got a sick-ass playmat with that art on it. Another duplicate, a Ghost Quarter, because we haven't blown up enough stuff. Another Sphere of Resistance, 2 Dismember, and a Witchbane Orb. Yeah, give you hexproof. It's important. Lands, I mean, like, 4 Mishra's Workshop, 4 Mishra's Factory. Like, we're gonna have to use.
I have a feeling when you're playing this deck in this format.
And for Wasteland. Yeah, like, you see what I mean? Like, this is just like pure land destruction. I hate you.
It's brutal. It's very brutal. And Talarian Academy, don't even get me started. That card.
Whew. God, back some busted. Sick shit.
Oh, that busted. I can't believe they used to make, that was like the most busted set ever, wasn't it? Urza's Block.
Yeah.
That's just the craziness. I wish they, like Tanglewire, I wish they still did stuff like that. But man, this is a cool list. What I want to say is I'm wondering, is this deck, Angelo, one that you really, really, really hope that you're on the play all day?
Yes. Yeah, you want to be on the play all day long. I mean, when you're on the play, your win percentages go up so much, it's unreal. Like, they have to have mental missteps in hand when you start, or they just do not stand a chance. Because if you do have the turn one Soul Ring, and it doesn't get mental misstep, like, you just can't lose.
Okay, yeah, because I'm just looking at this, I'm like, man, if this deck's on the draw, it might already be too far behind in this format.
I mean, it's not as good on the draw, but it's still really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, a Delver deck can get out in front of it on the draw.
Yeah, and is this the guy, there was another article about, is this the guy that, like, invented shops? There's like some article about he showed up 9 years ago with this deck and no one had seen it or something, but.
Maybe. I honestly don't know where shops came from as far as who built it. I'm not that much of a vintage aficionado. Like, I know vintage, but I don't know it like that.
We fucking need Will here for this shit. Jesus.
Yeah, unfortunately he couldn't make it.
Now, damn shark.
You're used to Legacy Metalworker, right?
Yeah.
Vintage Metalworker is.
Yeah. Other. I'm looking at Namtran's shops list. This is insane.
Yeah, it's, so Namtran, he's running the Metalworker side of it, which it's still shops. It still works the same way, except for he's going to use his Metalworker revealing things so he can rush out things like Steel Hellkite and Wormcoil Engine.
Nice, very
you know,
nice.
Because I'm just going to show you my, you know, like, I'm going to go turn one, and, you know, this might sound like Magical Christmas Land. Trust me, it's not. Triple Mox. Because he's actually not running Lotus, which normally you would run Lotus in this. He probably just doesn't have them.
He's short 15 grand.
Yeah, but what you do typically if you have the Lotus is, like, you play turn one Lotus into Metalworker, and then you just reveal your hand the next turn. You know, if your Metalworker survives, you just reveal your hand and you're just like, here.
Yeah, that's a lot of mana.
And I'm going to play a Wormcoil, and they're like, okay. Ain't really nothing I can do about that. And then you start wastelanding and strip mining the shit out of.
Yeah.
You go, I think you're dead.
This is nice. I'm confused.
And he has Staff of Domination in his as well, which is, you know, so not fair.
Why is Wasteland not restricted? But strip mine is.
You can't read them and figure that out?
Well, I know that Wasteland only hits non-basic.
That's why!
I mean, is the difference that in a yes. format like this, is the difference that important?
Yes.
Because it seems like all anyone's running in this.
Well, here's the thing. Which one's more powerful?
Well, the strip mine.
Obviously. Okay, the strip mine, obviously, because it can hit more things. Now, would you ever want to play in any format where somebody can have 8 lands that destroy lands?
Well, shit, that's vintage. I would hope the game would never get to that point, but yeah. Well,
I mean, that's essentially why. They was like, which one of these is more powerful? And they're like, well,
it's yeah, the strip okay.
mine. Okay, that's the one we'll restrict so we can only have 5 of these.
Like 8 strip mines or whatever. That's, yeah, that.
That would be every deck.
Yeah, that would be a bit much. I mean, I see the difference, but I'm just looking at these lists. I'm like, God, everyone's running non-basics. Like, Wasteland is just as good as strip mine.
Holy shit. Shit.
Yeah.
My man might not have had the money for the Lotus, but he does have 2 Tabernacles at Pendrel Vale sitting in his sideboard.
Ooh, that is a spicy one.
It's an expensive card, too.
Yeah. Very expensive. What's Oh, duplicate. Okay, that was in the last deck. Trinisphere, I like that as a one of. Again, and the
vintage, it's restricted.
Does every one of you have artifacts in your deck? I guess you just run the Talarian Academy is like a must.
Yeah. It's just absolutely a must. Moreno was on Blue-Red Delver, and this is, I mean, it's pretty much the exact thing we talked about earlier. Like, as far as vintage decks goes, this plays the most camera friendly. Like, your newer player can watch somebody play this deck and go, I get that.
Get what's going on, yeah.
Where you look at decks like Shops, and your newer player will look at that and go, I'm on the what? Or, you know, there's another deck that I'll talk about in a little bit. Whether it made the top eight or not, I don't think it did, but there's a deck called Doomsday that your typical player is going to look at Doomsday and go, I don't know what the fuck's going on, and walk away from the game, and then they'll turn around and be like, game's over?
Yeah,
what that happened? I talked to him for 2 minutes. What happened?
Doomsday is confusing as shit.
So, like, I'll explain that one too, because it's just worth going over. Harry Corvese was on Oath.
Oh man, the boy, Harry. This, sweet, man. What is, so why is this, okay, it's called Oath of Druids because of the
Due to the fact that Delver's really good right now, you could run Oaths, no problem. You're always going to be the one with less creatures than your opponent, so you get a trigger. The Oath trigger says that, you know, during each player's upkeep, if that player controls fewer creatures than your opponent, that player may reveal cards from the top of his or her library until she reveals a creature card. And then you put the rest of the cards that were revealed into the graveyard. Well, you have two creatures in your whole deck, and it's two Griselbrand. I've seen it used with other creatures as well, but they're always like your top power creatures, like a Griselbrand type creature. So you, once you get out Oath, and
why doesn't anyone run like a one of Emrakul just for fun?
Because you might not win on that.
Yeah, that's true.
Drawing the cards off of the Griselbrand is what it's makes better. It so powerful in this format.
Yeah.
Because you can just win off of those. Like, it's like, okay, I got my Griselbrand down, and they're like, all right, I need to get rid of that, and you're just like, I'm going to draw seven cards. Misdirect, Force of Will, Abrupt Decay, which Abrupt Decay, it's funny because this became like a tier two deck, and Harry added Abrupt Decays in it, and the power of Abrupt Decay, as strange as it sounds, makes this deck, you know, close to tier one again. Yawgmoth's Will is also in this. You know, for you modern players, you run the red version of it. It's until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard as though they were in your hand. And you know what? You're going to put a lot of cards into your graveyard. Trust me, you're going to do that. Excuse me, I'm sorry. You have your Ancestral Recall, Hercule's Recall, which is just, you know, return all artifacts. That beats, that is one of the ways you can beat a Shops deck. Two mana's all you need. You can get that off of your boxes alone. It might be three or four when it's all said and done, because Shops is Shops, but, you know, and this is a format where you get to run cool things like Demonic Tutor. So why not?
True. Yeah.
I'd love me a Demonic Tutor. Very cool deck. Basically, I mean, the combo that I explained is how it wins like 90% of its game. You just Oath of Druids, the Griselbrand out, and win with the Griselbrand. It kind of has a backup plan of Tezzeret the Seeker, but it usually does not happen.
Griselbrand, he's good in every format.
Yeah, it turns out he's just good. Voltaic Key is kind of a big deal because, you know, when you can tap a...
Or untap?
Yeah, when you can untap Moxen...
Yeah.
You'd be shocked at how good that is.
Yeah. Well, and you untap Time Vault and just keep gaining additional turns.
Yeah, you can do that too. You can absolutely do that. Time Vault with Hate Key. Just, I mean, that's its own combo.
That's pretty fucking nice, man. I feel like an extra turn. I think I'll take it.
Library of Alexandria. Ooh. Oh my god, these cards.
Yeah, Harry, where'd he get, he's been playing forever, so he's probably got these cards since.
He did borrow some of them, I know that for a fact. But yeah, I mean, he has good friends.
Yeah, no kidding. This deck is sweet. Good on you, Harry. Good job, man. Making top eight. That's awesome, so.
Yeah, really cool. Especially doing it with that list. Like, if they're not ready for Oath and they let an Oath resolve, like, ugh, I don't know how you win through an Oath. Cause there is literally nothing that kills a Griselbrand in this format. Nothing. Like, people don't use, you know, destroy target creature effects. It's like they might
Run a lightning bolt. I think a few lightning bolts, but there's no swords or anything.
Yeah, you run bolts, you run fire and ice, you run little things that kill little things, because that's typically what everybody plays with, is a bunch of little things.
What about Caracas? Is that in this format?
Caracas? Yeah. No one runs it.
Yeah, I guess someone's running it, yeah.
And it's just... Like, I put down a Griselbrand. Once I get down a Griselbrand, how do you win? And most of the time, it's just not there. It's kind of sick. We had another Delver list next, which, you know, it's another Delver list. Again, these play very, very fairly. And then we had another Oath list. This Oath list is a little different. He does not have the Tezzeret in there for Wincon. He has Jace the Mind Sculptor in there as for his alternate Wincon. And he has three Gristlebrand because, you know, why put everything into the graveyard? Aside from that, Maelstrom Pulse instead of Abrupt Decay, I mean, fair.
Yeah, he's also not running the Dig Through Time. He's running, I don't know if Harry had a Vampiric Tutor or not, but.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, this guy's running that. No Dig Through Times, but he's running a Recall.
Yep. So, hey, Harry was on Recall too.
This list is sweet.
I'm almost positive he had a Recall in there.
Yeah, he had a Hercules Recall.
Ancestral, yeah.
But I don't see any. Oh, he did have an Ancestral, yeah. Yeah, this is so good on, Harry for making a, what seems like obviously was a good metagame choice.
Yeah, Oath won. Apparently the Jace as the side plan over the Tezzeret makes a difference, I guess. I mean, it is Jace. Jace is insane.
Better than all.
He is better than all, in fact.
That's the Chapin song, right?
Yeah, the Chapin and Spurg thing. Okay, so I said that I would talk about Doomsday.
Yes.
Ryan, have you ever seen Doomsday?
We've talked about it before on here. I think Will mentioned it once. Yeah, Will's mentioned it a time
or two. Yeah, he has. And here's the funny thing about Doomsday. They actually put that fucking thing on camera the other day, and I about lost my mind when they did it, but Doomsday is a deck. Okay, Doomsday is a card that I believe it's one black and a colorless. Might be one black and two colorless. Don't quote me completely on that. You remove your library from the game, but you pick five cards out and you build your own library out of those five. So you stack it how you want it. You have two win cons in the deck. And it really depends on what your opponent's playing and what they're doing. Because what happens a lot of time is you'll go for your Doomsday and literally the players will sit there for 5 minutes trying to figure out what five cards they need to win.
And you can Doomsday on turn one with a writ because it's three swamps. It's three black.
Okay, three black, yeah. So, you know, yeah, you use a writ. Usually you want to set it up with a duress first to make sure that the path is clear. But you can still do that even turn one.
Yeah, very easily.
And your two win cons are essentially, you can Yawgmoth's Will somebody out, or not Yawgmoth's Will, but, Tendrils of Agony somebody out. Okay. You know, that's literally, I've played 10 spells this turn. You know, off of my Doomsday, I'm going to grab, you know, a Sapphire, a Jet, and Ancestral, and, freaking whatever, and I'm just going to kill you. With, you know, Tendrils of Agony, 20 damage, you're dead. The other way is you get a couple Mox, an Ancestral, a Lotus, and a Laboratory Maniac. And you put yourself down to where you have no cards in your library, and then you Ancestral yourself, which gives you the win because you have to draw a card, but you can no longer draw cards. Laboratory Maniac triggers, opponent loses.
This is one of those cards that just seems like so high risk, high reward. I mean, you were getting rid of your entire library and you were hoping that nothing goes bad.
Right. This is why
that you go off.
This is why cards like Duress and, you know, and it's Duress. Like you don't care about Thoughtseize. You don't, it's Duress. That's the card that works in this format because the creature's not going to stop you. You know what I mean? It's going to be a spell that hoses you. So like, you know, you're going to duress things and it's just, oh my God. And that is part of the reason because like you said, you know, you're all in when you cast Doomsday. It's like, I'm winning this turn or I'm dead. So you go all in and that's part of the reason why players will literally sit there for 5 minutes trying to figure out what five cards they want.
Yeah.
And if you sit there and watch this on camera, I mean, you think Eggs is bad to watch? I'm being real honest. Like, you're just sitting there watching this game going, what is he doing? What? I mean, like, come on, man. What really is he doing? And then it's like turn six, all of a sudden, you know, he's just staring at his cards for 5 minutes and it's like, game? And you're like, how the hell did he just win? What just happened? You know, it's not very camera friendly, but it is a very cool archetype within, Vintage. There's a bunch of other ones and I wish I had more time to go over all of them, but unfortunately, you know, life pulls me away and the rest of this show as well.
Yeah.
Damn, this was a busy news week. But I did go to the, Eternal Weekend. I was there for a day and then a personal emergency arose and I had to get back to Pittsburgh. I could not stay in Philly any longer.
So you were just there on Saturday?
Friday night and Saturday, yeah.
Right, okay.
But, and boy was that drive home hard. I am going to say that, you know, I heard Sunday went fairly well, but Saturday.
Yeah, you went off.
Was absolutely the worst large tournament I have ever been to in my life. It was run absolutely terribly. And, you know, I have their email address. I'm going to give them feedback. You know, like, I'm not just going to bitch on a podcast and hope they hear it. No, they're getting feedback from me. I'm just trying to figure out exactly how I'm going to word it so I don't sound like, you know, I'm calling them all idiots and assholes, because I very easily could call all of them idiots and assholes. They come on at 9 o'clock, time that the tournament was supposed to start. And they say it was 9 o'clock, and they come on the mic at 9 o'clock.
Jeez, that's early.
And they go, we're sorry, everybody. There's going to be a 15-minute delay to the start of this tournament. I'm like, okay.
15 minutes. That ain't bad, man.
That's not bad. I can deal with 15 minutes. Like, damn, most people would just start at 15 minutes and not even give us the heads up.
Yeah, that's true.
They're saying it's going to start at 9:15. I'm cool with that, you know. And I'm sitting there just, you know, talking to random people that, you know, I met down there. And I'm like, okay, 9:15, we'll get this fucker fired up. Sounds great. So about 10:15, I'm going, why has this fucking tournament started?
Wow. This is an hour now.
Yeah, we're at an hour and 15 minutes now. And I'm like, why hasn't this tournament started yet? And they come on and go, terribly sorry, we've run into a problem with the computers. This tournament will start in 5 minutes. I went, okay. 5 minutes, gee, you ran into this problem how long ago? You could have told us. But cool, if it's going to start in 5 minutes, I'm cool with that. Well, obviously, you know, their time on 15 minutes wasn't very good.
Yeah, so multiply 5 by the 4 and you should figure it out.
So, you know, 5 minutes did not go very well either. Players meeting sat down at like 10:48. Okay. And
they didn't have the players meeting while they were dealing with whatever delay. No. Like the smart thing would have been to do.
Nope. And then they went ahead, they did the players meeting, and they ripped through the players meeting. Like, there was all kinds of normal, like, you know how every tournament you go to, you hear the whole, you know, watch after your stuff.
Yeah, drinks on the floor.
Blah. Yeah, put your drinks on. None of that shit, dude. It was just like, welcome to this. We have this many players, blah, 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 blah. We have 480 players. It's going to be 10 rounds, and we're going to do this. We're going to do that. Pairings are going to go up soon.
Is that all that was there for Legacy? 480?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible, man.
Dude, it was great, because let me tell you, if there was any more than that, the room that they held it in, it was actually the largest ever Eternal Weekend.
I'm sorry, man, but that just sounds hella small for fucking what
it's
I
was. It's a one-day tournament, though.
Yeah, well, it's a weekend-long event, right?
Right, but it's a one-day tournament because the next day is Vintage. So it was 10 rounds plus top 8. I mean, like, they're eventually going to have to turn that. You're going to have to choose which format you're getting in because it is growing every year. This is something that really, I mean, this is like the fourth year of existence for it. And each year it grows a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. This was the most they've ever had for the Legacy main event. Vintage was in the same ballpark. But the second day usually does a little better because the Vintage tournament, it'll pull in its 250 players. But then, like, you have a PTQ going on at the same time. And you have, you know, this going on and that going on. And, like, it's a little bit – you actually get more players for day two, but it's because the side events are so much better. But the main event of Legacy – look, people don't go to Eternal Weekend for Legacy, man. They're going there to play Vintage most of the time.
Vintage, that's fair. Yeah.
And it's true. The truth is, like – they will, as the Vintage continues to grow and the Legacy continues to grow, you're going to have to get to the point where you choose which one you're going to get in. Because, you know, it's going to be so large, you're not going to be able to play in both because you're going to be coming back the next day to do like your last 3 rounds and a top 8 because, you know, you only need a few hundred more players and, you know, this becomes a 12-13 round event. Like, you know, if it gets up over 1,000, I want to say it's a 12 round event.
Jeez.
Yeah, and then when you put the top 8 on that, how do you get that in one day? That's part of the reason why it starts at 9.
That's what I thought was like that it started Friday and was going to be like, I thought there'd be like 1,400 people there or something. Like, I thought we were going to be talking GP numbers.
No, I mean, it's not quite GP numbers yet. It's going to grow to that. I fully believe that it's going to grow to that. But the problem is, like, even if you say, like, I said 480 and you immediately went, wow, that's horrible. SCG's best Legacy is like 300.
Well, I've heard of them hitting 500s and stuff, but not since they've done Modern. Their Legacy numbers really
I mean, yeah, they don't typically do as well. But my big issue with this event, and, you know, it wasn't the security. The security was amazing. Like, they had dudes that clearly were not – okay, Titan Games had guys working for them who clearly knew nothing about Magic. They were club bouncers.
Okay.
That's what they were. And you had to walk in one way and you had to walk out another way. Okay. And you wore tags on, you know, one for your bag and one for your arm with a number on them. If those didn't match when you walked out and you had to show them to them, I watched them grab somebody by the back of the neck because he walked out without showing. He was like, hey, hold on. Wham, dude. I mean, this dude, he had to have been like 6'8", 320 and he just grabbed this little nerd by the back of the neck. And this dude, like, just immediately he's like picked up off the ground. He just stopped moving and was like, whoa. He's like, I need to see those. So he turned around, showed him the tag. He's like, all right, have a good day.
Why, like, that still doesn't mean you can't jack shit and put it in your bag.
But there was also six police officers in the hall.
That is amazing because this is clearly one of those events where someone could come and, like, what happened in Baltimore.
Yeah.
The guy with the gun.
We were in the small hall too. Like, we weren't in the normal Philly GP hall that's right across the street from Market. We were in the same convention center, but like three blocks down up on the third floor in this like little room.
Yeah. They should have hired like a private security firm, like, armed guards and shit.
Well, you figure between the overly large judge staff, and there was a lot more judges there, like there was as many judges there that there would be for like a GP. I mean, literally as many judges as you'd have at a GP, but for an event of 500 players.
Yeah, just watching.
Plus,
shit.
I mean, there was a cop, or there was like six cops in there at all times wandering. So between the judges and the cops, like, you wasn't grabbing something without somebody noticing. And then, you know, if you did try to do the bag grab and walk out, you was going to get killed by fucking Mongo out there. I mean, so, like, as far as security goes for a Magic tournament, like, I don't think you could do it better. I'll give them all the credit in the world there. But for fuck's sake, if you know, here was the problem, okay? The problem that held things up 2 fucking hours. The first game did not start until 11 o'clock. Uh-huh. The thing that held everything up 2 hours was their servers, or their computers, for some reason, had a hard time connecting to the DCI database.
Oh.
So the judges had to literally put in everybody's name and DCI number manually. Okay, this is not an easy task. And when you know your judges have to do that, you know this is going to take, what, at least an hour? Maybe two, right? So how hard would it have been to make an announcement at 9:15?
Go eat some breakfast.
Hey, guys, we're terribly sorry. This problem arose. This is what happened. We are now going to start this tournament at 10:30. Go ahead. Go get something to eat. You know, go do something else. Don't be held hostage inside of this room. You know, go out and, you know, we'll see you back here at 10:30 for the start of the tournament. Like, would that have gone over greatly? Probably not, but I bet you it would have went over a hell of a lot better than holding us captive for 2 hours without anybody knowing what the fuck was going on.
That is fucked up.
I mean, like, literally, I looked at one of the guys I was talking to, like, 2 minutes before they started it, before they announced pairings were, or seating was going up for the players' meeting. I was like, this goes another 5 minutes, I'm going to ask him for my fucking money back. I was like, this is ridiculous. This is just, it's hit a point where they're not talking to us, they're not explaining anything to us. I want my money back. I was like, they literally have like 2-3 minutes and I'm going up there. And then all of a sudden they said that. And
they,
you know,
should have just left and gone to Slicks and drank.
Well, that would have turned out to be a very bad thing for me because I did have to rush home that day. But yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things. It was like, you've absolutely got to be kidding me. This was horribly run. And again, they had us in the small room, right? So there was a lot of players who came for side events. Well, because we was in the small room and the main event, you know, was almost 500 people. Guess what they didn't have room to do?
Side events.
Exactly.
You've got to be kidding me.
They had a sealed side event going because that's what fired first. Was some sealed thing that they was doing, which, you know, I probably would have jumped in that if I'd have got my money back.
But that surprises me that there's even sealed events at Eternal Weekend.
Well, they had some kick-ass prizes for the sealed events. Like, the one sealed event was like, I forget what you could win. But it was something really, really cool. And then the next day's sealed event was a PTQ for Washington, D.C.
Okay, nice, yeah.
So that's why you have, you know, sealed events at this place. But the sealed event fired. So then there was three drafts that were completely full, and they're waiting for a round of the sealed event to get done. So there was room for one of the drafts to step up, because obviously, you know, some people were going to drop, and then we're going to have that corner of the table to go ahead and do the next one. So, like, I know, like, Martin and Frankie, I walked around with them for an hour after their thing had filled up. They waited an hour to actually get in and play their games of draft.
A stupid draft.
Yeah, and I'm just, and like, even they said, like, they ended up going up there and going, how much longer? Like, you know, if it's going to be any longer, I want my money back. And they was like,
we came all this way. They're all the way from Canada.
Yeah, Montreal.
Yeah, fucking Montreal. God damn, dude. They came all the way there. You should have that is absurd. That's the kind of event. I mean, they should have fun shit going constantly.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same.
They should have vintage side events.
I felt like, okay, the room they had was enough to hold the vintage and legacy event. You know what I mean? But they should have had a room that about the same size just for side events.
Yeah,
you know, just you know, go knock out, because like you said, this could be like, you know, it's Eternal Weekend. I'm gonna go have fun. I'm gonna go play in this vintage side of it. I'm gonna draft. I'm gonna play sealed. I'm just gonna spend a fuck ton of money with you people and just play every turn. I'm just not setting Magic cards down all day.
Yeah, you'd think because vintage is on Sunday that all the vintage players would be there Saturday wanting to do side events. They should have vintage events for them. Maybe a grinder. Like, man, there should be all kinds.
That's why Frankie was there. Frankie was there to play vintage. He had no care to play legacy.
Yeah, when you were talking about this, I was like, oh, this sounds like it's gonna like be artists and it's gonna be a GP like environment.
Dude, the artists they had were amazing.
Oh, okay, there was artists.
Oh, there. They had six artists there. I mean, the artists they had were amazing. They had Steve Argyle.
Shut up, really?
Yeah.
That's dope.
I can't even remember the names of all of them. But no, the
artists. I'd let Argyle sign Megan's tits.
Yeah, I mean, dude, they had so many good artists there. It was like every good card you can think of in vintage, that artist was there.
And, that's sweet.
You know, Poole, I want to say his name was.
Oh, yeah, big time artist, yeah.
Yeah, and dude, I mean, it was just like, wow, this is really fucking cool as far as artists go and things like that. I mean, it's like a toned down GP environment, clearly, but they needed more fucking room. And they needed to communicate better early on, because another thing is, you know, had we been in round 3 or 4 by the time like Frankie and Martin was ready to do their draft, there would be enough drops that the room would have been there. You know what I mean? It was kind of just the beginning of the day, fuck everything up for the rest of the day. And, you know, at one point I was like, why the fuck don't they just set a table outside of this fucking hall and just do it out there? It's an 8-man draft. You need fucking 2 tables, which there's plenty of them around here, and 8 fucking chairs. Just set something up outside and go do this. And, you know, they wouldn't do that. It made no sense to me. I'm just like, this is ridiculous, absurd, and everything else, like, this is the second year Titan Games got to run this, and I hope like hell they learn from their mistakes this year, and I hope that people who went give them feedback on this, and I hope other TOs out there, if you have an issue that big early in the morning, you need to tell the player base.
Yeah, that's
go get something to eat, man. I mean,
it's not cool at all.
I mean, I'm a smoker, and I sat in there for 2 hours going, when am I going to get to start this?
Like, right?
I'd like to go get some food. I would have liked to go outside and have a cigarette. I would have liked to do anything but sit in this fucking chair held hostage.
Yeah, that's absurd. Or, God damn, they couldn't have the players meeting and then dismiss you guys.
They could have done that.
I'm like,
I mean, you pay $50 to get into this tournament. Like, I'm sorry. A $50 tournament, I expect to be run at the top. At the highest possible point that it could be. Yep. And, you know, yeah, problems are going to arise, but how you handle those problems is going to tell me whether or not you're a good tournament organizer. And I felt like you handled them completely wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
So, I mean, that was that. I'll give more stories when we get into the what's up, but for now, I'm going to get off of the whole slamming Titan Games things, you know, if you was there on Saturday, please give them feedback on that and please repeat what I just said.
There you go.
If there's going to be an hour and a half problem or an hour plus problem, you should let the players leave for an hour.
Yeah, don't fucking hurt the speech. You don't want to talk about where you stayed and shit?
I'll get into that during the what's up portion.
Okay, cool.
You know, a little bit later when I tell, you know, when we talk personal stories.
Cool.
Let's move on in the news to, it's spoiler season again.
Uh-oh.
It's Commander spoiler season.
Yeah.
Some cool cards, some jank cards. some cards I think are going to be legacy playable that Ryan does not think. And to whatever asshole out there ruined the commander,
thank that guy. Thank him.
No, I don't like
speculators that. Appreciate that.
No, I don't like that at all. Like, I think that's just flat out wrong. When you get a list and you put the whole thing up, Eric, I mean, it's like ruining Christmas, man.
I get that, but at the same time, too, it lets some people know, hey, your card's about to, reprinted. Get rid of them. Like, it just lets people know when some of their cards are maybe about to crash.
Your card's about to get reprinted. Guess what? All of the websites have the same information you do. Their buy price is going down immediately.
Yeah.
So unless you're going to go out and mice the fuck out of somebody who didn't look at the website, I don't know. I just think it's wrong. Like, if you get your hand on something like this,
kind of ruin the Christmas aspect.
Whoever you are, ask Guillaume Waffle-Topple what happens when you do shit like this. If they catch
If they catch this guy. Oh yeah, without a doubt.
But he put out the whole blacklist. We know every card in the black deck now because this dude was a dickbag.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I mean, a couple cards I wanted to go over. We'll treat this like any, early spoiler season, Ryan. You pick two, I pick two. I don't know if you want to go as far as three. There isn't that many cards spoilers.
I'm not excited about this shit. Fucking, I'm just now starting to even look at playing Commander. I told Tice, I need to risk the redeemed list, man. I need to get my token on.
The green white one.
That being said, I'm Nyxilis. Makes tokens.
That's a planeswalker too.
Yeah. So, I like the outfit. Dude looks fat as fuck, so.
I feels you. So what does Obnixless do, Ryan, just for the people?
Three, two black, loyalty of three. Kind of low, but he does plus two right away.
Yep.
Each opponent loses a life. You gain life equal to the life lost this way. Or you neg to him and put a 5/5 black demon creature with flying onto the battlefield and lose two life. So,
oh darn, what a drawback.
Yeah, so he does, you do get to protect him and then start, I guess, blessing him afterwards. But at neg eight, you get an emblem that says colorless and a black. Sack a creature, you gain X life and draw X cards, where X is the sacrificed creature's power.
And Obnixilis of the Black Oath can be your commander.
Yep.
The only planeswalkers that can be commanders are the ones that have that text at the bottom. Just
to
point out.
Seems to be, is that a new thing with this set? Because there's several of them. Is every color going to have one or something?
That's the way it's going to work out. Every color is going to have one planeswalker.
Who's the white one going to be, Angelo?
I'm thinking Urza.
Ooh.
I know a lot of people want to see Sarah, and I would be fine with that as well.
Yeah, that'd be dope. That'd be dope. An angel.
Yeah.
It's gotta be an angel, man. It's gotta be.
I don't know, dude. I mean, people have clamored for years for an Urza planeswalker.
Man, that would just suck if we got Urza. And well, I guess is he supposed to, would Commander be the only set? Cause.
Yeah, well, the thing
is. He fit in the storyline somewhere if they brought him. Cause man, Urza's sweet.
With these commanders, like, they did like Freylies. I mean, like, Lawn and War's gone, dude. It's been destroyed.
Okay, so those people are like dead.
Right, like Freylies is no longer alive. So, you know, and that's obvious. Teferi is kind of alive, but kind of not. No one really knows. In the Vorthos, he didn't die at the end of the book, but he was on his way to death. Kind of a weird situation. Obnixilis, though, I will say on that card, going back to that, there's a lot of flavor there because these are all throwbacks. And this is before he turned into a demon. He was, you know, a human.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I was wondering about that. Shit made no sense. I was like, they're just fucking doing because it's Commander. They can do whatever they want.
Well, they're throwing everything back in time a while. And this is before he became a demon. And what happened was he touched the Chained Veil. And that helmet that he's holding in his hand, that fused to his face and he became that demon.
So the Chained Veil takes away, so you're not a planeswalker anymore.
It doesn't for everybody. It acts differently because like it hasn't done anything to Liliana yet. But Obnixilis at that point had been under contract with the same demons that Liliana had for so many years that he was already corrupted too far. So when he touched the Chained Veil, he lost his spark and became that demon, and he was stuck on Zendikar. Plus, there's the weird powers of Zendikar, you know. Huh. Strange things happen on Zendikar. You know, it's kind of weird. But no, that was really cool. Another flavor, like, I like flavor things, especially in Commander. Like, flavor's cool. Ajani's brother has a card now.
Yeah, I was gonna ask him if this dude was somewhat related to.
Yeah, he's, Johnny's older brother's name is Jazal. He was the.
Jazal?
Yeah, Jazal. And he, Johnny looked up to him a lot because he was the leader of their pride.
Okay.
And when Jazal died and Johnny, they kind of turned on him because he was this white furred Leonin, like, you know, he was an albino and like it was weird. And
albinos thought, are weird. Yeah.
They thought he killed his brother and that's when his spark ignited, because they never liked, Johnny. And once, you know, but you know, Jazal did, it was his little brother and he always looked after him. So once Jazal died, it was basically like, you know, everybody just went after Johnny. And that's, you know, he went ahead and did his shift there. But what Jazal is a, two colorless and two white first strike 4/4. And for two white and three attacking creatures you control get plus X until the end of turn, where X is the number of attacking creatures. So like in a token strategy, this thing is fucking sick.
Yeah. I could use that. Risk the redeemed.
There you go. Yeah, you put this in your wrist deck.
That's a good one.
It absolutely is. You got another one you want to talk about? I know I got at least two more.
Well, one of Megan, because Megan's like reading the books and shit. She's always talking about Teferi.
Oh, Teferi. Yeah.
Teferi. So that's another planeswalker. So.
Yeah, Teferi's cool. We went over.
I think everyone kind of knows about, yeah, everyone's kind of aware of Teferi or whatever at this point. Something I think is pretty sweet. I'd never seen these before. I don't know if they were standard playable at one point or if it's always been commander is these medallions.
No, that's a new thing for this set of commander.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like a sweet cycle.
Yeah.
So like Jet Medallion is kind of like Mox Jet, the, affects black things. So black spells you cast cost one less to cast. So one colorless less to cast. That's pretty sweet.
For two mana.
Yeah.
It's cool if you, you know, it's cool. I ain't gonna argue with that. They're cool. I could, you know, I could see playing them.
And just flavor wise, I like the, kind of the throwback. I like that they're keeping the same, like, names as the Moxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like Dualcaster Mage. I like Dualcaster Mage.
You also like Reefworm, which,
I do, I like them both. But Dualcaster Mage, like, dude, trust me, Legacy playable.
Alright, it's cool, it's like a red, I'll counter your counter spell, but it's three mana, man. Granted, it's got a body attached to it, I get that, I understand that, I'm not a moron, like, chill out on me, people, I understand, like, I see that this is a powerful card, I'm just not, I guess as convinced as you, this is really all that Legacy playable, aside from, I mean, that can counterspell something, but I don't see you paying for this and then another spell to copy it, like, it's just too much mana for Legacy Burn for me.
Okay, you're looking at it completely wrong. Here's the thing, Legacy Burn plays on the opponent's turn most of the time. Okay?
Okay.
So your mana's open on their turn anyway. So what you're going to do is, you know, say you're at three. And here's, I don't think this is a four of in Legacy Burn. I think this is a two of. I think you're going to, what you're going to see in Legacy Burn decks is it's going to be four Monastery Swift Sphere, four Eidolons, two of these. And then, you know, your spell package. Fire Blast is going to be your, fallback. So what you'll do is, you know, you're going to keep your mana up because if not, you can throw, you know, at the end of your opponent's turn, you're going to throw all your fucking lightning bolts and things at their face like you always do. But if for some reason they go ahead and they play something like a Treasure Cruise, you're going to cast this and you're going to copy that Treasure Cruise and you're going to draw three cards. Okay. And in Legacy Burn, drawing three cards is a very powerful effect.
Yeah. It's
you're
essentially willing, 9 to 12 damage.
Yeah. You're willing to spend three mana on that.
Is.
Okay.
And a Fire Blast, that's the essentially free, right? Is that the one where
you return two mountains to your hand?
Okay. I thought it was sack two mountains. It returns them, whatever.
Either one. What you're going to do is you're essentially going to pay one mana for the Dualcaster Mage. And that's your backup plan. Like when you do have the mage in hand, if you have a Fire Blast in hand, you go, all right, I'll just, you know, at the end of turn, I'm going to play this Fire Blast. I'm going to tap this mana, you know, float three mana, play this Fire Blast. With the Fire Blast on the stack, I'm going to, you know, cast this Dualcaster Mage and then, you know, deal eight directly to you. And then the next turn I can swing with my Dualcaster Mage. But essentially, with so much Delver and so much blue being played and so much card draw being played, like, this is main portable right now. There's not a lot of decks that aren't running cards that say draw three cards. So, you know, you go ahead and run this. And if for some reason you end up playing against a deck like Death and Taxes where, this isn't as effective. Well, you use it with the fire blast, or, you know, you copy one of their swords even, but, you know, kind of dependent on situation, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, kill that germ. but then you'll take that out after game one, but at least you have a plan for him during game one if you get into a bad match. That's why I say this thing is very legacy playable. It's kind of a meta game choice.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. I don't know. Time will tell. You got to, like, all your points are valid for sure. I definitely see it's certainly powerful with things like Fire Blast and shit, no doubt. That's a ton of damage. And being able to counter your opponent's counter spells, pretty sweet, but.
Yeah, I mean, very rarely, very, very rarely are you going to play a Lightning Bolt and then dual caster Mage to copy the Lightning Bolt. Like, that's you're right as far as that goes. That is not going to happen unless that's going to win you the game.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem optimal. I don't know. It's a lot of mana, but the card is sweet, so I mean, we'll see. I don't want to say it's going to be this set's money card, or I don't think it's like True Name or anything, but
it could be close.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, Reform, I just like because it's like if you don't exile this, dude, it's gonna kill you.
It's so funny, the little fish with the thing coming out of his mouth. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it's like what happens is he's an 0-1 for 4, and you're like, oh, that's terrible. But when this dies, you get a 3-3. And when the 3-3 dies, you get a 6-6. And when the 6-6 dies, you get a 9-9.
Yeah, it's in one another's bait. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, this one eats this one, so you get that one, and you know, so on and so forth. I just think that's cool. That's a great design.
Yeah.
That's why I like that. I like the design. The money card was kind of revealed today. For some reason, it's not up on Mythic Spoiler. Mr. Tice kind of spoiled it on the Pit Imps page.
Titania?
No. No, it's a 6-6 Death Touch life-linking artifact that we've seen before.
Oh, yeah. Wormcoil Engine.
Yeah, Wormcoil Engine is back. And so if you didn't get your Wormcoil Engines, this is the time. And from what Ryan said, it's in the red one. So the red one between the red card that I just talked about, because, you know, you're going to get that damn Wormcoil.
A lot of sweet red cards in here. Felden of the Third Path. I mean, a red reanimator guy.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked. I never put Felden on as a red creature or a red character. Like, I never did that.
This is pretty nuts. I'm kind of interested in, because Commander's kind of like political. I like this cycle of offerings. Like, you get when they come in, you choose an opponent, and you and that opponent, like, each get an effect. Like, the Sylvan Offering is like X and a green. You and a chosen opponent put an XX green tree folk onto the battlefield. And, then you get to choose an opponent. You and that player each put X11 green elf warrior creature tokens on the battlefield. Just being able to choose, like,
yeah, I think the Infernal Tutor is probably a better thing for the political, you know, like the political aspects, because the black one is sick where it's like, I choose this opponent and we're both going to sacrifice a creature, and then I'm going to choose that opponent and us two who are teaming up against this other dick that I just made sacrifice a creature, we're both going to bring our biggest thing back from the graveyard.
Yeah.
I like
pretty
that.
Nice. I'm a fan of that. And yeah, some of the new mechanic they've spoiled, Lieutenant, for this set. I'm hoping we see more cards with that on it, because the one they spoiled, don't think is really all that, but.
Yeah, I do like this common, Commander Sphere.
Ooh.
It's 3 mana, and you just add 1 mana to your mana pool of any color in your commander's identity. Like, I mean, that's pretty good, but
that's really good, actually, in Commander, especially with people running 3-colored. There's a lot of 3-color commanders out there.
There's a lot of 5-color commanders out there. But you can sack it and draw a card once mana becomes absurd.
Yeah. That's a really good common, man.
It is.
I think that's going to see a lot of play in Commander, actually.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to have one of them in their decks, in every deck that they own.
Yeah, like, I mean, unless your Commander's mono-colored.
That could be the Commander Tower of the, even in a mono. I mean, why not? You can still sack it to draw. And it gives you a little bit.
If I got Fist the Redeemed, it gives me 2 colors, because she's...
You can use it up to 2. You can tap for 2 different ones. But no, I mean... That could be remember when Commander Tower came out, it was a common in the first Commander set. It was worth a bunch of money because you can only get them in the Commander sets, and everybody out there who had 30 different Commander decks needed fucking 30 of them.
Yeah.
So like they went up like there's no tomorrow, and that was really cool.
I'm a fan of this card. Yeah,
so am I. That one. If you're going to play Commander, you're going to want a bunch of them. So I expect those to be actually in high demand. So last week we told you guys about cheating, and in case you didn't need another reason not to cheat, there are consequences to your actions if you say cheat. Two big announcements this week about cheating. One of them, Mr. Trevor Humphreys. Remember the shuffle guy, Ryan?
Yeah.
Well, he shuffled his deck the same way, and then he shuffled his opponent's deck. And that was in the standard, and then he did it in the modern, shuffled his deck, and then shuffled his opponent's deck, cheated both ways, and they said, you know what, let's just give him a year for each one of those offenses.
Yeah, he won both events.
He did. 4 fucking years, goodbye.
Yep, get him out of here.
4 years, toodaloo, see you around, your Magic career is essentially over.
Yep, peace out.
I mean, the only thing you get to do now is play Magic Online, and I would not join a PTQ because you won't get your ticket. So, yeah, there's that. And the other big one, Alex Bertoncini. He was suspended for 3 years. For what reasons? No one's really sure. They just have like a laundry list of things that they, you know.
I mean, oh, well, here's the thing. And it is, I've been listening to JudgeCast a lot lately because I'm, you know, and getting better at the game, trying to learn the rules a bit more and shit. And they explained, I don't know, it had nothing to do with this. This was several weeks ago, that one way in which they can give bans is not even necessarily by someone outright cheating or catching them cheating. What they do is, that's why every time you get a warning at event, even just a little warning for a slow play is cataloged.
Yes, it is.
They take notes on that. Eventually, over time, you build up enough of a catalog and enough of these instances that the DCI can step in and suspend a player. In this instance, it was a 3-year suspension. It probably had to do with his misplays and the warnings he got at the Pro Tour, which is just very similar to accusations that have been made against him as well recently. Things like tapping the wrong color mana, trying to get away with playing like a sorcery at instant speed, things like that.
Yeah, not putting back cards after a brainstorm. I know that was a big one.
Yeah, so these are, while he wasn't necessarily caught in the act cheating or whatever, there was enough. I feel like in this case, what they did was they just said, look, we've got an established pattern here.
Yeah, we have your past.
We're going to take a call.
Yeah, we have your past, and, you know, plus there's a pattern developing, and, you know, if he, and again, like, he was never caught outright cheating during any event, but he did make a bunch of little mistakes, like Ryan said, and the thing is, like, I guess at some point they just go, look, you know, you just needed to play tighter. If you would have played tighter, this wouldn't happen if you didn't actually mean to cheat.
I agree. I don't think he'd have been suspended if he had just been playing tightly.
Yeah.
I just think too many of these so-called quote unquote sloppy mistakes, what I read in one article is like just simple play errors. Well, in his case with the character background,
it all adds up.
Yeah, it adds up. And so don't think that just because you don't get caught cheating that you could get a bunch of warnings and slow play a bunch of events. Eventually, you can just get suspended because they've got a fucking laundry list on you.
Yeah, they absolutely can. I mean, but Jared Betcher, for anybody wondering, because he got caught up in a lot of accusations as well, he was found to not be doing anything untowardly, and he will not receive a ban this year. I had just recently heard about a lot of these things about him. Like, that one shocked me. I was like, really? I didn't even know about this.
It's pretty blatant.
Hi, everybody. This is future me. I'm about to say a lot of stupid things. I could have swore somewhere I read that Jared Betcher had been exonerated, but I keep seeing things everywhere, so I'm no longer 100% sure which way that exactly went. People keep asking if he had been, if he hasn't been. I swear I saw it somewhere that he was, but I don't want to give you people bad info, so take that part that I say about him being exonerated or found innocent or whatever in the fuck with a grain of salt, because I'm no longer 100% sure. Thanks, guys. Now, back to the past.
But they've decided that what he was doing, and I'm not 100% sure what it even was. Have you heard exactly what he said?
Yeah, I went back, I read it. I haven't gone through all the video posts, but I was watching one earlier today. There's a list of people. somebody went on a huge rant about it. One of the pro players, like, this is just, it's absurd. Raymond Perez is completely getting screwed out of Rookie of the Year. He should have it, no question. The video is so damning. So you can see it plain as day. Round two, where was this? Worcester. Yeah, round two, Worcester. His Jund Aggro deck, he's playing some green-red monsters opponent. And every time his opponent cracks a fetch and then gives Jared his deck after finding his land and Jared shuffles it, you can clearly see him. Like, he eyes the deck, he gets a land on top, and he shuffles in it away to where the top card doesn't move. And he does this, like, false cut where it looks like he's cutting the deck, but again, the top card doesn't even move. At some points, it's so obvious. Angelo, you can see.
This is the same thing that Humphreys got caught for as well. No, well, he did that in the modern event to somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, what Humphreys was doing was thumbing would keep
some
land cards to the bottom or whatever, and you'd get a hand of all spells.
Right, but in the modern event, he flipped it. Anytime somebody cracked a fetch, he put another land on top. Like, yeah. There was an article on Brainstorm Brewery written up by somebody.
These are very, very simple. These are like, I saw like some Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon players commenting on this, like, come on, Magic players. Like, these are some of the oldest, most well-known Yu-Gi-Oh! Tricks in the book. You could watch Betcher, you could even see him, like, bend the top card to, like, palm it and keep it in his hand at the top.
Yeah.
As he's shuffling. Four times in this match, round two. Now, okay, here's the odds. If your deck is 40% land, which, I don't know, 40%, that's
about right. Between 40 and 42% is your most lands.
Yeah, so throughout this game, he shuffles his opponent's deck four times. All four times, a land gets flipped on top to a courser. He had a courser out when all this happened. Every single time a land was flipped, and the odds of that happening are 2.56%. Incredibly low, right?
Right. That could happen once in a while, but it's not. If it happens a bunch.
And it happens a bunch. There's a whole thread with just video after video of him doing this shit. Tom Ross in the Invitational top 8. Ross beats him 3-0, but boy, Betcher tried to do all he could to make sure it didn't happen. Like, I mean, it's just, he's not near as good. When I was watching Humphrey's video, and I haven't watched all the Betcher video yet, but when I'm watching Humphrey's, it's damn near impossible to tell what he's doing, aside from, hey, why are my cards not face down? Why are you shuffling them kind of sideways like that?
Yeah,
that, he's very, very good. Betcher, you could see the guy folding the card up. You could see him, like, palming it, man.
Yeah. The bad thing is, like, okay, if you were going to get me doing this, it would be during the initial cut. You know, when you hand your deck to your opponent and your opponent hands the deck to you. Because, like, I've just trained myself to stare off into outer space. Like, I turn my head. I don't, you know, make sure I'm not looking at it. But the thing is, like, I'm also not looking at my opponent who's shuffling my deck. You know what I mean? And, like, now I'm wondering if I have to reevaluate how I shuffle decks. But if I'm sitting there staring at him, you know, it's not much for me to accidentally look down, and I don't want to be accused of being a cheater. Where if I, you know, cock my head sideways and put the cards all the way on the other side of my body, there's no way I'm looking at them, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of like, but during a game, like, I mean, yeah, if you're shuffling my deck, I'm watching you left and right, like after a fetch or something like that. Yeah.
There might be a rule, too, where you can actually, after your opponent's initial cut, you can ask them to cut your deck again.
You are not allowed to cut your deck when they hand it back to you.
No, not you.
You used to be able to.
You can ask your opponent to cut it another time if you think that they've cut it in a way that's fishy or...
You can also say, Judge, can you randomize my deck for me?
Yeah.
You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to just, I watched how he shuffled, or I didn't quite get a chance to see how he shuffled because I was looking off in the left field while I was shuffling his deck. And, I just want you to go ahead and randomize that because I didn't get a chance to see it. You know, and you can look at your opponent and go, it's no offense to you. It's just, you know, I'm just trying to look out for me. Also, something that you should know that I don't think most Magic players do understand is during the shuffling portion, whether you're shuffling your own deck or somebody else's deck, by the rules, you are not allowed to look down. So anybody who riffle shuffles and looks down while they're doing a riffle shuffle, they are breaking a rule. If while you're shuffling, you're sitting there, you know, just doing a straight The cards are face down.
Well, that's a rule that's never enforced.
It's never enforced.
You see that all the time on camera.
But it is a rule. You are not allowed to look down at the deck. So that is something that, quite frankly, you could call a judge over for and be like, look, just randomize the deck, please. And then when a judge walks away, if you don't think your opponent is cheating, when a judge walks away, you can go, dude, I mean, you look down. You're not allowed to do that. You know, instead of getting you a warning, I just asked them to randomize my deck. You know, and speaking of little mistakes adding up, like the Bertoncini thing adding up, there's one pro player that, you know, she makes a lot of stupid mistakes. And I think she's going to have to start playing.
And I watch a lot of Melissa.
No. Dude, she's been disqualified from a pro tour because of mistakes. She makes a lot of little mistakes, dude, during games. And DeTora, I'm not saying she's a cheater. I'm absolutely not. I would actually bet that she isn't, but. Like Ryan said, where they can add up, you know, warning. She gets a lot of them. She might have to start thinking, you know, maybe I do just have to just play a little tighter because a precedent has been set now. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Where, okay, this precedent's now set. We have to, you just kind of have to learn to live to that precedent now.
Yeah, they're just being extra cautious to protect
the integrity of the game.
Engine, yeah, the integrity of the game, the face of it.
I just,
at the same time, this whole Betcher, if he doesn't, like, look, and I've been a fan of him lately, like, I'm really, really disappointed. It hurts, like, cause the dude, like, honestly, I mean, he's a face of the game. He's supposed to, you know, be a leader in the community. And man, I just almost feel like Watts, he just wants to sweep it under the rug cause he's the rookie of the year. And God, how embarrassing would that be?
Well, you know what? And here's one of the funny things to all you players out there that sit around and, you know, bust your hump and God damn it, you just feel like some players just get all the breaks. Here's the thing. I talked to, you know, a lot of pros behind the veil whose names I'm going to keep completely, what's the word? Anonymous. But the Pro Tour has rampant cheating. Okay.
I don't doubt it.
So a lot of these players that you just go, wow, they're on such a great run. This is amazing. You might want to think twice about that. A lot of these players who you're just like, man, he's just, you know, what a good year he's put together. You might want to think twice about that. Now that's not to say that, you know, every pro player who does well is cheating, but the thing is, if you start to see a player never have a dip, they go 2-3 years without a dip, they're probably doing something funny because even the best players in the world get run bads. It just happens. Everybody runs bad. So. From the conversations I had with a few pro players behind closed doors, there's a lot more cheating in the Pro Tour than what we, as your average fans, realize. So I'm just going to put that out there and leave that out there as is.
Doesn't surprise me. Maddie Studios of Heavy Meta posted a great link on Twitter earlier to a YouTube that you people should check out, how to catch a cheater at MTG.
Yeah, I've seen both of those videos.
Great little videos, yeah.
Yeah, one guy did both videos, and it's basically both shuffling techniques that me and Ryan talked about. If you can find that link that Maddie put up, go ahead. If not, it's YouTube. You go to YouTube and you just put in MTG how to catch a cheater, and it'll pop right up.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. Moving on to the next subject. Good news on the MTGO front.
Really?
Good news on the MTGO front. A policy has changed with MTGO, and it involves their reimbursement. Here's the deal. In the past, say you joined a Swiss event. I'm just going to go with Swiss event. You paid 3 packs and 2 tickets to get into this Swiss draft, and you won your first 2 rounds, and then you got booted from the event. You file reimbursement. Why? Because you didn't get to finish playing your fucking tournament. What they would do is they would look and say, well, you won 2 packs, so we're going to give you a pack and 2 tickets back. That way you get back what you put in. This has always rubbed players the wrong way, as it should. Like, you know, you played your ass off for 2 rounds, you lost 2 hours of your life, and all you're going to give me is 1 pack and 2 tickets? Like, I earned those 2 packs. I should be able to keep those 2 packs. And you should still give me what I paid because I didn't get to play the whole tournament. That's not how they're going to do it. That is now how they are going to do it. No longer does winning any prizes affect what they give you back. They will always give you back what you put in. So if there's a deck registration error where, like, you know, you play and you go and you hit submit deck, and for some reason when the decks pop up, you have all of your cards in there, you know, like the problem that was at the PTQ on MTGO, play it out. Who knows? You might win some packs, and if you win some packs, great. And then you just file for compensation and go, look, I hit submit deck 3 times and it wouldn't submit. I played it out as is and just, you know, used my sideboard, and you can win the event and still get your stuff back. And that's the right way of doing that. It really is. Yeah. So good on Magic Online for saying, hey, we have all this digital product that costs us nothing to make. We're not going to, you know, stifle these people. We're going to let winners keep what they won. That's awesome.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Hey, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that was basically from feedback that the community gave them. That's what made that decision. So, you know, they're listening. You know, just go through the proper channels. You know, like, I'm sure you've heard other podcasts say it. Don't just go on Twitter and start bitching. You know, actually fill out the forms and write them up the way you're supposed to. And, you know, they'll eventually hear you. So we're going to do a real fast topic this week, Ryan, because there was so much shit. Halloween's coming.
Uh-oh.
That's cool.
Yep, fucking one of my favorite holidays.
And what is the best part about Halloween? Candy, right?
No, not even close, dude. Fucking slutty costumes.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, as a kid, go back to the little kid in you, man.
Slutty costumes, even as a third grader.
Oh, you're terrible. Anyway.
Dude, I've been into women since I was fucking the little boy, man.
So have I, but,
Yeah, candy's pretty sweet. Fucking.
Actually, candy is sweet. Like, if you don't get candy that's sweet, it's not candy.
Yeah, that was kind of a pun. That was kind of a pun. man, best candy?
Yeah, what's your favorite and what is like the worst? Like, you walk up to somebody's house and you say trick or treat. What do you want them to put in your bag?
Reese's.
That's such an easy answer for so many people.
Reese's or Reese's Pieces. Either one.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm a Three Musketeers guy.
Too light, but good.
You know,
good.
I have always been like, you know, my candy bar of choice is Three Musketeers, but Reese's Cups are right behind it.
Did you know, I did not know until the other day recently, there's actually a fourth Musketeer.
Really? You didn't know that?
No. I saw some movie with Cheech in it the other day.
You need to pick up a book.
Yeah, it had Cheech and David Hasselhoff in it, dude, so.
That's awesome.
That's way better than the book. But it was the Three Musketeers and Cheech. But apparently, yeah, Megan was like, fuck, did you not ever have to read that shit? Like, yeah, there's a fourth one, so.
Yeah, I read that on my own in like the third grade, dude.
Yeah, so I didn't know that, but that's a good candy bar. That's a good one.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of it. I mean, it's just like, I'm also not the person who freezes candy. I've never been the freeze chocolate guy. I like it chilled, and I like that soft center. Like, that shit is just, I've always enjoyed that, so. And, I'm gonna go worst candy. What is the worst candy? What is the candy that's gonna make you pull those eggs out?
Dude, I don't
and
know
bomb
what
their fucking house.
And what are the little, they got a little red wrapper and like a honeybee on them. Maybe they're even called honeybees.
Bit of honey?
Bit of honeys.
Ooh.
Those hard ass.
I don't mind them too much, but no, I can see where you're coming from. If you want me to egg your house, you're going to give me candy corn.
Candy corn's pretty bad.
Like, I'm going to kill you if you give me candy corn.
It's like just hardened sugar.
It's fucking terrible. Like, every year I like joke with my wife when we're at the store. I'm like, oh, we got to get candy corn.
How do
Queen's
you
coming.
Give that to, like, how would you even, what would you dump that in a kid's
dude,
bag or something?
You can get little packages of it.
Oh, well, fuck that.
Yeah, that's gross, dude. I hate candy corn. Like,
that's a terrible Halloween thing to give out to kids.
I can remember as a kid, there was this one lady every year, she saved up all of her pennies, and then she would wrap up 25 pennies in tape and give them to all the kids, and it's like, just buy me a fucking candy bar, you dumb bitch.
Jesus, did you, that's crazy. Or what you do is, you take an onion, and you cover it in caramel and nuts, and you give the kids caramel-covered onions.
Dude, you know the bad thing? I'd probably love that.
You'd probably have some parents coming back knocking on your door.
Dude, I'd probably love that. No, I go buy onions and just eat them whole.
Oh, stop, dude. That's fucking nasty.
Yeah, I like onions. Like, a little bit of salt, and I'm just like, yeah, this is what's up. Yeah, I like
that. Yeah, that's really gross. Speaking of Halloween candy, though, did you hear in the news this week the rich lady whose letter got printed in, like, the newspaper or something?
Oh.
Bitching about poor kids trick-or-treating in her neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. You know what, man? I swear to God, I heard a quote today that I just find just hilarious. And it was like, it was the name.
Oh, man.
It was the name of somebody's book. And it was, in 10 years, all men will be women. And you know what? People just fucking got to stop worrying about other people so much.
That's just hilarious. So this, like, her letter was like, one way you can tell, she's like, if they have a mask on, it's hard to tell if they're poor. So what I do is look at their shoes. That's a good indicator if they're poor or not.
Who the fuck cares if they're poor? They're little kids.
Yeah, exactly. This woman's crazy.
I mean, it's not some 10-year-old's problem that their parents are crackheads, you know? Like, you can't hold that against the child. If you do, yeah, you're a prick.
She's bitching, like, if I leave a bowl of full-size candy bars out on my porch, the rich kids will only take one each.
Bullshit!
Poor kids will take... Yeah, exactly. No.
Bullshit!
Every kid is gonna take the whole damn bucket. The first one on your porch.
Dude, straight up, I bet you, like, a well-mannered poor kid will take one. I used to take one a lot of times, you know. Sometimes I took the whole...
You're more respectful, man. You don't have that sense of I'm fucking entitled to shit. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
you're a spoiled rich kid. I mean, what's stopping you?
Yeah,
you got everything you've wanted your whole life. What's stopping
you? Yeah, affluenza, man. That's for sure. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I was like every kid would just steal the whole bucket. But now that you mention that, I guess lower class kids probably would be less likely to take the whole thing.
You know what I mean? You walk up there and you're like, this bitch is giving out full fucking candy bars. Word. Take your candy bar, move on. You don't think I'm going to take the whole bucket? Like, damn, that's a full fucking candy bar right there. That's what's up.
Yeah.
And then some, you know, spoiled rich kid comes along and goes, hey, check this out. Doink. Yeah. I mean, yeah, poor kids will do the bag snatching, though, once they get a little older. But, like, yeah, a little 8-year-old ain't going to... I'll tell you what, we'll take the age and just say 8-year-old kid.
Yeah.
A little 8-year-old poor kid is going to go up there and grab one candy bar. Yeah. When they're 12, you're absolutely right. The poor kid's going to take everything because they've been shat on their whole fucking life.
Yeah. No, they're jacking you for your bag.
But a little 8-year-old spoiled kid, he'll take it all.
Oh, man. We used to walk around the nice subdivisions and just run up behind people and take off with their bags, like 6th, 7th grade.
Dude, I did so much bag snatching. Like, we started bag snatching like 4th, 5th grade. We had teams, like 6 guy teams, and we just... I mean, we'd just run down the block and we'd be running with like 4 bags.
Hit the block. That's what's up.
Dude, we would start with none. By the time we got to the end of the block, between the 6 of us, we all had like 3 bags in our hands just trucking. You know? And then you waited until like a half an hour before it was over. That way you knew them bags were full.
Oh, yeah. So, and you go back to the spot, split it up.
Hell yeah. Just be like, word, we did good tonight, you know? No, you didn't do good. We did bad. So, okay, yeah, that's our topic for the day. So what's up, Ryan? What you been up to? What's good?
Me and Megan went and got inked up the other day.
Oh, yeah? You got a tat?
Another one, yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of working on this piece on my arm, man. I'm trying to go for, like, not necessarily a sleeve, but sort of like, I guess, a scene, I guess.
Okay.
Cohesion, but fucking... working on tweaking my Mono Black Devotion list, man. Took down F&M. Mono Black Devotion, dude. Funny as fuck. I didn't have the asshole I had at game day that told me my deck was stupid. Most people laughed. Like, I had a couple people laugh and just be like, what the fuck did I just play? I had some opponents who would, like, comment. I had no idea how to sideboard because they would literally saw, like, a Herald of Torment, and I just killed everything they played that game. So they, like, one guy commented after the game, like, oh, I sideboarded. Like, I thought I was playing Mono Black Aggro, and you just missed your one drops. And, you know, so they had no idea how to sideboard. Just, I don't know, deck kind of like catches people off guard, man. And obviously 2 weeks in now, a little better playing it. So I got some sideboard changes. I'm going to cut the Dictate of Erebos out. It was pretty cool. I did actually bring that in and play it. My last round, I was up against some like Nia Walker's monsters list. And so I brought it in, and, when I played it, Megan walked by and over my shoulder was like, how's that Dictate? But I don't think my opponent got it, but I smiled. I thought it was funny. So yeah, fucking, doing the Mono Black thing. So like I said, got some changes to make. And then Acropolis Fiend, cut for an indulgent tormentor. I like that guy better. So that's the promo. Oh, I would either that or Nightmare, just because Nightmare has been around since Alpha and no one's played him.
Is Nightmare legal?
Yeah, dude, he's M15.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's, dude, when I get my squelching leeches in the air with a herald on them, it's over. And Nightmare is just like a preloaded flying squelching leech.
Right, right.
I think a one of may be good. It's probably stronger than the tormentor, which is a 5-3. But mm-hmm. Let's have that, you know, draw at your upkeep kind of thing, so.
Right. Yeah, no. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Run them on a black. Why not?
Tweaking that, fuck, Abzan Aggro and working on this green list with Megan. Actually, she's been, like, opening the door to check on me. She wants to work on this deck, so. We're doing like a green red. The 50K was this weekend in Indianapolis, TCG player.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Durward got a third place running red green mid range and featuring four Hornet's Nest and four Quarter Calling. So
sweet.
We're gonna take that. We're gonna take a
ooh
similar to what he did. We're running the four cords and the Hornet Nest, and then the rest of it's kind of.
Ooh, that's brutal. They swing with like a rhino or a pelucranos and then you pop that thing out. Ugh.
Yeah, it's nasty. And I watched that event this weekend. It's nasty, dude. It's very brutal. And I think he was running like a one or two of Hornet Queen also. Yeah. Even if you can't cords it out, that's always sweet to like cord into their rhino or something. But if you can just playing it, there's like the Jeskai decks hate to see it because the only way they're getting rid of it is burn. So you're gonna get
Jeskai can fly over though.
Well, yeah, that's true. Or I mean, but if they have to burn it out, that's shitty for them.
Yeah.
Or if every time if they go, you go turn, you know, follow up the Rabble Master with it, whatever. Every time that little stupid goblin token has to swing, you're getting a 1/1 death toucher.
Right.
They add up. So
they add up a lot.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good in that matchup too. It's something you could definitely board out in a lot of the, you know, black heavy lists. There's a black white mid range list going around now. That kind of thing. You know, anything with like Heroes Downfall and shit is probably not optimal games 2 and 3, but it does still have that gotcha record. Very nice. So
yeah, that's sick. That is a gotcha. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. And shout out Caleb Durward. He wrote some big long apology. Fuck TCG player and fuck those tournament organizers. You did what you wanted to do and you had fun. They got all pissed off and shit at him because, you know, in the top eight, you expect to see coverage and the guy, him and his opponent, he decided that you could draw in they drew.
You're allowed to do that.
And they split. If they ended up drawing, they each got $6,000. So they were like, fuck it. Caleb was saying how bad he needed, like car repairs and shit. And he just didn't want to risk it. He wanted the 6,000 and his opponent took it with, you know, they did it together. What they did was like played out some like mold the two or something. So when the camera came on, they each only had like two cards in hand and the poor announcers. Oh my God. They had Frank Lepore and Marshall had no idea what was going on. Like who cares? Like. It's fun. You guys were doing fun, having fun doing your thing. You got your money. Fuck them. Who gives a shit? The people at home didn't had to cry about not getting you to watch you.
Dude, you're allowed to draw. I mean, I see it every time I go to an F&M or anything else. You're allowed to draw.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly happened on camera. Tough shit.
You know, and Frank Lepore's like, you know, we put on an event. It's kind of just respect for the tournament organizers and the organization and everyone that's watching that you put on a good match. And it's like, they don't owe anyone any. Magic is played for the two people sitting down at the fucking table staring across from each other. They're not playing it for anyone else. Like, no one's like, I'm playing Magic for my family. Like, no. Like, what the fuck? Like, no. He got his money. He wanted his money. He took the draw. He got his $6,000.
Dude. Leave him alone. Frank Lepore, you're wrong.
He's a douche.
You're wrong, brother. I mean, look, I can understand the chat kind of blowing up going, man, I wanted to watch a match. And hey, yeah, you wanted to watch a match, but he's not required to play if he decides that he wants to draw in. You know, that's... You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to say, yeah, I ain't playing. We're going to split. It's cool. I mean, we both get $6,000. It's cool. Yeah. That is so fucking stupid. I can't believe people are bitching about that, or he even had to put out a public apology.
Yeah, yeah.
People, again, grow the fuck up.
It was pretty absurd. I don't understand this, why he had to, Ruben actually posted this on PitMs, the public apology.
Right before I came on here, and I didn't get a chance to read it. So I was like, I'll read it after the show.
Yeah. So he said he made it to the top four where we chop for $6,000 a piece. And he says, that's more than I've won in any other single event. Like, and that means a lot to him, man. That's a lot of money for some people. You know, $6,000.
That's a lot of money for me.
Yeah, that's not a joke, man. That's a big chunk of change. Like, that makes a difference in somebody's life. Like, if the guy wants to chop, let him.
Hey,
I don't get why he had to write this long ass and for fucking Rashad to call him. He says Rashad begged them to call off the gentleman's agreement. And he says that he feels like a jerk and he's sorry he didn't listen to Rashad. Fuck Rashad.
Yeah, that's
fuck that motherfucker. Like, that's some bullshit. I'd have told him to shut the fuck up. It ain't his money. Mind his business.
I'll tell you right now, if I was one of those four, and once the gentleman's agreement was on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you even come up and ask me and go, hey, we can play this out, or we can all just walk away with $6,000. I'd be like, done.
Done. Even says that they had nothing but pride on the line, so it seemed like a chance to do something crazy. And the people, so the spectators there liked it. They said the people around were cheering and laughing, and that I got carried away in the moment. You didn't get carried away, Caleb. You did, man. I don't get this. Like, you don't owe TCG player. You guys don't owe them a damn thing. Like,
he didn't get carried away. He got $6,000. That's what he got.
Thank you.
He has no reason to apologize. Shitty.
Sorry, man. I got off topic for a bit. But I really, dude, just been working my ass off in Cast from Exile shit and Penance, of course. But it's been real fucking busy at work. We're finally, we got that one big busy push before November, and then shit dies down. I'm ready for my Christmas break, so.
Oh, I feel you on that. I'm ready for a break too. I actually kind of looked at my boss today and said that. But, okay. It's getting
What the fuck you been on, man?
I've worked a lot, but obviously over the weekend I, you know, took a little trip. Well, Friday I went into work early so I could leave early from work. I was working by myself. I knew that going into the day. So it really didn't matter when I started.
That sucks in your line of work though.
No, it was cool. I went in like an hour early. It wasn't real, real early. All I was doing was fertilizing.
Okay. You don't really need a team for that.
No. So like, I was like, you know, I'm cool. I'm just going to be, you know, pushing a spreader all day. Like, I'll be all right. So like, I went in a little early, and it was weird because like, when I got everything loaded up into my truck, drove down to the site, like as soon as I got there, the sun was finally beginning to crest over the horizon. Like, I could just see it coming up over. I'm like, cool. I got here just in time. Cause if I'd have got there any earlier, it'd been too dark to see. So I was like, so this worked out perfect. And I, you know, went ahead and I put in, you know, a good solid 8 hours, called it a day, left work, you know, an hour early so I could, you know, get on the road. But I get home, you know, I do a little bit of running that I have to do with the wife, and I go to jump in the shower. Dude, I broke my fucking foot jumping in the shower.
Shut up. And you didn't notice this, or you just like,
No, I noticed it. I noticed it right away. I stepped into the shower and like hit a slick spot. You know, I don't know, like, you know, cause the shower's running and what have you.
Before
I get in and I step in, and it was a little slick, and I didn't realize it. When I, you know, went to put my other foot in, I just lost it. Down I went, right? Immediately fucking black and blue and just starting to swell up. I'm like, oh, fuck me.
That sucks, dude.
So, and you know, I ended up getting it checked out, Sunday. It turns out, no broken bone right on the top of my foot.
No shit.
Yeah, so, but.
So are you out of work or what?
No, I'm working. I did the shit at home. I can't afford to just sit at home, dude.
You're working with like a boot on and shit?
Normal work, boot tied real tight.
You're nuts, man. You need to get a boot. Your foot's not gonna heal right, bro.
The bone that it is, there's really nothing they can do for it, they said.
They don't give you a boot. They didn't put it in a boot. That's nuts.
No, it's a tiny bone on top of your foot. Right as it's like beginning to go out.
Yeah, they can't cast it or anything.
They can't cast it or anything. They just said they just gotta let it heal.
That's crazy, like, man.
All right. It's like we can't reset it. It's only, you know, like the bone's only like 6 inches long or something like that, if that. You know, it's like an inch long, actually. And it's just this tiny little bone. And it was like, there's really nothing we can do. I was like, all right. So broken bone in the foot and I go to Philly. Drive my ass down there. And the funny thing is, like, I've been to Philly, I don't know how many times, right? Like, I mean, I've gotten to the point where, like, I know how to get around that city without looking at a GPS or anything. Like, I just know the city. That's how many times I've been there.
Yeah.
I missed my fucking exit on the turnpike.
Fucking kidding me.
Like, I'm going down the turnpike, I'm cruising, and I see a sign that says Philadelphia that way, and I'm like, okay, but I didn't see a sign that said 76 that way. So I'm like, no, I ain't right yet. That's one of those early exits. Get you off in fucking Westchester and you still have 2 hours to drive into town. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what I thought it was at first. No, that was the turn. So I ended up.
How long before you realized?
I was damn near in Jersey. I was.
Yeah. Get the.
I was on 276. But no, it's kind of funny because, like, although it didn't work out because I missed it was the best case scenario for actually missing my turn. The turn that I decided, I was like, fuck, I could get off this highway. I'm on the wrong fucking road. So I just jumped off on the exit when I noticed it. I was about an hour north. But when I got off, the road that I got off on was the main street of Philly. It was just an hour north. So it was like, okay, like I talked to the dude at the tolls. I'm like, how the fuck do I get to Philly from here? Do I got to get back on and, you know, make all the turns? He's like, no, that road right there will take you right down to Broad Street. He's like, that is Broad Street. It's just we're, you know, an hour north, which it really wasn't an hour north. It was just there's so many lights and shit, you know, like if it was on the turnpike itself, it would have took me 20 minutes to get there. It's just, you know, it was like a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit the whole way, a bunch of lights and stop signs and shit. And I was like, all right, cool. So I got off there and then I, you know, drove south and it, you know, it was an easy drive from there. It was just, you know, drive south, but it was just weird. Like I couldn't believe I missed it. So I show up at Slick's house almost at midnight. I pick up my deck or actually Chris brings the deck over to me. And then, me and Slick walk across the street. I pick up some beers. He picks up some more beers and dude, he has this nice beer boutique, like right across the street from his house. And it's like a nice beer boutique. Like there's no bad beers in there. They have like the make your own six packs. It's good. So, you know, we go in there. I pick up some beers and, this guy, Tim, he picked up some beers. He'd just shown up when I showed up and Slick wandered over and got some more. And then we went in and, you know, we shot the shit for a little bit, played a little bit of Frankie's Cube.
Nice.
And then I got a little bit of, testing in with, Death and Taxes. Went to bed at like 3:30 or something like that. Woke up the next morning at like 6. Was rocking around the house like, let's go, got a tournament to go to, guys. And they were all still awake after I went to bed, you know. So I'm just waking guys up just being a dick. Only person that was actually going to the main event was that guy, Tim. So he got up and me and him split a cab and we went down to the event hall and I did get a decent cheesesteak the night before while we was cubing. So I was like, that's cool. I got my cheesesteak while I'm here. And, you know, I went down to the event hall, signed up, went through all that process of all that bullshit that I talked about earlier. And then promptly went 0-2 in the first match.
That's rough, man. 0-2 start.
Well, here's the thing. Like, okay, I'm getting lent Death and Taxes. I've never sat down and played with Death and Taxes. Like, I know how the deck works. Like, I know the theory behind it. I understand all that, but never actually playing it, really. It's like, what's a good hand against this deck? What's a good hand against that deck? So I sit down, and my first matchup is a fucking mirror match.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I look at the dude, and I'm like, so how long have you been playing? He's about 4 years. I'm like, oh, fuck. So I lose game one, game two comes around and I had him, dude. I mean, on the ropes dead. Cause Chris runs the guy I got the list off of, Lancey. He runs this card in his deck that makes target creature, gives it protection from artifacts. So whenever they play their Batterskull, you just go, yeah, your Germ has protection from artifacts and the Batterskull falls off. And you just keep them off of that equipment all game. And I had him beat and it was about turn 12, literally like the next turn he was dead and I look down and I go, fuck. And guy across from me goes, what? I was like, you just won, dude. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, I cheated.
What?
He's like, what do you mean? I was like, I did something I wasn't allowed to do. I was like, I didn't actually cheat. I made a misplay. He's like, what? I was like, turn two, I played Athalia. He goes, yeah. I was like, turn three, I played a Mom and a Jitte. Now, how do I do that with three mana with Athalia out? And he goes, oh yeah, you couldn't have done that. And I was like, no, so you win. You know, I was like, signed the slip. He's like, hey, really honest guy, you know. Most people wouldn't have done that, blah, blah, blah. All that shit I hear all the time because I do play with a little bit of honor, I guess. So, you know, I was like, okay, that's cool. I probably would have lost that anyway because it was a mirror match and he's been playing the deck so much longer than me. He probably would have beat me anyway. Plus he run the dice roll. And after talking to him after the game, he was like, really, it comes down to who gets out their equipment and gets it going first. Yeah. So I was like, all right, well, yeah, cool. You win a dice roll, I do have that one card that'll help me out in that situation and kind of delay things, but if I don't get it, then and then the next match I play, I sit down and I'm playing against this dude, real cool dude. Fuck, I can't remember his name. It's on my slip in there, but anyway, he's playing, Sneak and Show, which dude, great matchup for me. Like I should win this game. Like, I know I should win this game. Like, I have fucking Caracases. I have Swords of Plowshares. I should win this game. Game one, of course, I haven't sided in anything yet. And so he gets me. That's cool. That's fine. You know, he sneaks, you know, he sneak and tells out sneak attack. Yeah. He plays sneak attack and he gets out an Emrakul on turn four. Okay. I pick up my cards because that's what you do when they play an Emrakul on turn four. I pick up cards now. Okay. And I looked and the next card was not a, you know, Caracas or anything. Not that I could target it anyway. Somebody cool. What I do by sideboard in the next, next game, I go turn one Pithing Needle and I proceed to just stomp him.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. the next game, he goes first, of course. The hand I kept, I don't know how I could have kept a better one, sort of, if there would have been a Swords of Plowshares in it. It was, three planes, or actually it was two planes and a wasteland. Sorry. So I'm like, cool, you know, this is all right. A Thalia, a Revoker, a Spirit of the Labyrinth, and a Other Sworn Canonist. I'm like, this will work. This is cool. This is,
yeah, it seems decent.
This is just straight. So, I go ahead and I made the mistake on turn two. Turn two, I cracked a wasteland to keep him off of a red mana or something like that. And instead of, you know, playing down anything. And the next turn he gets a little bit of a ramp and he goes show and tell. And I'm like, oh, fuck me. So I do the right thing and I put down a Phyrexian Revoker. He puts down his card. We flip. He flips a Gristlebrand. I flip a Revoker. I name Gristlebrand. Here's the problem. Gristlebrand is a 7/7 flyer with lifelink and I never saw swords.
Or
a Caracas. So he beat me and I was like, you know what? I'm good. I'm calling it a day. My foot hurts. I'm done. So then like I walked around and just hung out with people. And just, you know, had a good time and
you didn't do a bunch of side events. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That's right. No, I just hung out with people and just had a good time. Just, you know, shooting the shit. And
why didn't you go back to Slicks and get wasted?
Cause they weren't there. By this point, they were on their way to the hall. They actually walked like halfway. And you know, some of the guys were at the shop. Some of them were over at the bar and what have you. And then finally, you know, I'm like, well, you know, I got to call back home and, you know, see what's going on back home. And had I gotten, you know, the best of news when I called back home, I would have been like, let's go fucking get tanked.
Yeah.
You know, I left beer at Slick's house, you know, like, but I didn't get the best of news when I called home and checked in. So I was like, all right, I got to go home, guys. I got a personal issue I got to deal with. I'm sorry, but I got a bolt. So I jumped back in the car on 2 hours sleep. Mind you, dude, I got up at like 4 a.m. Friday, got like two and a half hours sleeps tops, played all day in the tournament and then walked around and goofed around and then drove home. By the time I got home, you know that white line on the right side of the road? The solid white line?
Yeah.
That motherfucker became a wall, dude. I started hallucinating. Like, I should not have been on the road, but I'm like, I'm like an hour away from my house. I gotta keep driving.
No, yeah, that's not cool, man.
So I drive the whole way home, and I've driven through.
You should have took Buttercup with you, and he should have been driving.
Dude, I haven't seen Buttercup in a minute, but yeah, like I've driven through worse plowing snow. Like, you know, I've been in worse shape. So I'm like, okay, that's cool, you know. I'll be all right. I'll get home. I got home, you know, did the whole roll down the window, drive like fucking Ace Ventura, just to keep myself awake. And I got back to town and, you know, stopped at the store even on my way home. Cause it was weird. Like when I hit the final toll booth before like my exit, I had one more exit after I hit the final toll booth in PA. When I hit that final toll booth, I was like, I got like renewed. I got this second burst of energy. I'm like, yeah, I feel good, man. I'm only like 25 minutes away from my house. Great. But 20 of those minutes is on the turnpike. So I'm driving on the turnpike and at about 15 minutes, I start the whole half hallucinating thing. And I'm like, fuck. So, you know, I get back to the house. I take care of the personal issue. And that basically was my weekend, man. I do have a fuck ton of shout outs though.
That's a crazy weekend, but at least you got a good up there.
Yeah, I mean, shout out. I got one for Slick. Thanks for thanks for giving me the spot to stay at. Next time I'm out there, I'll definitely be there the whole time unless something crazy happens again. But, you know, this was one of those weekends that started off bad and it should have been the first hint not to go. You know what I mean? let me give a shout out to JR as well. It's always cool talking to that dude. He's a trip, man. Frankie and Martin. Yeah, this is Frankie, Three Rules Frankie. those two crack me the fuck up, man. I could walk around with them all day long and just listen to them talk. Fucking hilarious.
Yeah, Frankie's accent cracks me up.
yeah, good guys, both of them. Had a good time, you know, chilling with them. Martin, of course. I mean, that's my friend. Shout out to Chase and Motika. I mean, they were chilling at the crib when I got there and, you know, we hung out a little bit. To that Tim guy who I didn't really get to meet you all that much short of the taxi ride down, but that was cool. Bobby B. He's like Yami something on Twitter. He came up and, introduced himself to me. He's been following me for a while and we talk on Twitter. Cool dude. He did okay in the, vintage side, did not do as great in the legacy, I believe, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know, but you know, shout out to him. Shout out to Will O'Neill. He was cool. I got to meet him. He's another Twitter follower. Shout out to Chris Lancey for the deck. Shout out to Colton Sanford.
Yeah, posse member Chris Lancey. That's what's up. I thought he was going with you, man.
No, I'm going to be giving him another shout out in a week because his wife's going to have a new baby. She's real close to due. So he had to stay home and be a family man because that was the right thing to do, man. She could pop any minute. So, but, yeah, absolutely shout out to him. Shout out to Colton Sanford, posse member du jour. He was wearing the Pit Him shirt. He started out the vintage day like 5-1 and was just fucking crushing dreams. I think he finished like 4th among decks with no power. Like he had a good tournament during the vintage, like, you know, but yeah, he hung out all day with me. It seemed like every time I turned around at that tournament, he was there and, you know, good dude to talk to. Good to meet him on other stuff. And I also want to give a shout out to Clues, who I finally got to meet face to face.
Really? Yeah. Oh yeah. Clues was there.
Yeah. Clues was one of the judges there. And, you know, like before we got there, it was funny too, because I see him walking into the wrong side of the hall because that's where I thought it was going to be too. I'm like, Clues. And he goes, oh, hello, sir. Do you know where we're at by chance? I'm like, I have no clue, man. And he walks into the building. He comes back. He goes, apparently we are like 3 buildings down or 3 blocks down or something like that. I'm like, oh, okay. So we're walking and we're talking and I look at him like, you don't know who I am, do you? And he's like, no, your voice is familiar, but no. I'm like, really? I'm Angelo. Oh, geez. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Oh, you're Robert Loja. Darn it. I should have known that. I'm so sorry. It was a trip. It was hilarious. And then like a little bit later on in the tournament, when things slowed down on his end, because obviously in the morning he was pretty busy. I got to stand and talk to him for about, you know, 10, 15 minutes and just shoot the shit. It was good to finally just meet Clues in person. For some reason, I imagined him a little bit taller than what he is. But isn't that the way it is with everybody?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's my huge list of shout outs. If I missed anybody, I'm so sorry. I wrote these down like ass. I don't think I missed anyone, but I might have. You got any shout outs, Rye?
Shout out to the posse, of course. Shout out to, everyone here on the cast. Shout out to Will, who couldn't be here tonight. Shout out to everyone over at Cast from Exile, and shout out to everyone who's been, giving us support and showing us love there. And, we need ideas, people. Give us ideas. And posse members, we're starting a list. So I know a lot of you guys want to get on there. We're going to start that real soon. So just message on the posse page. Of course, we want to find out what makes, you posse members tick. So that's the place to do it.
Sweet. Oh, wait, you're just going to have random posse guests on.
Yeah.
Hey, it worked for us for, you know, 10 episodes.
That's the plan, man. It's, you know what I mean? It's by posse for posse. So you gotta have Pit and Posse. Come on, shoot the shit. We're hoping to get, like, I told Kevin Schultz is my goal. I really want to get Kevin on for an episode. Tice is obvious, of course. Big Tuna, Braden Defoe, shout out to him.
There's, you know what? Tice would be the person to have on now with all the Commander shit coming out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I kind of want to maybe build a deck on, like, over the air, like live kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Just be like, okay, you pick the commander and we're just go person to person adding a card.
Yep. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, so shout out to all of them. And yeah, and hit me up on Twitter, Brother Yan, Brother Ryan, get at me.
If you want to get a hold of me, you get a hold of me at Gonksu on Twitter, that's GANKSUOU, same on MTGO. Also a pitimppodcast@gmail.com for something a little more long form. Next week we have, SCG Oakland, GP in Nashville, which is going to be team limited, and a GP in Santiago, which will be standard. But until next week.
Yeah, hey, fuck, go out there with, cards tap, ass to slap, motherfucker, just get on it.
Damn, you went with that this week, not the week, but Will here.
Aye, fuck y'all, Scandinavia.
Have a good one, guys. Go fuck yourself.